Good morning. I'd like to welcome everybody to the October 2, 2017 Commission meeting of Chelan Public Utility District, number one of Chelan County Commission. This morning is a study session. I think the bulk of the morning will be taken up on our business plan for and looking at the next 5 years. This afternoon, we will have our business session, and things will be conducted according to the agenda, assuming the commission approves the agenda on item two. Before I get started, I'd like to remind anybody in the audience to silence their cell phone, and if you wish to speak to any item over the course of this session, please come up and use the mic here at the table and state your name for the record, name and address. And looking around, we have all of the commissioners here, all the regular staff are here, and at this time we're about ready to get going with item one on the as the Pledge of Allegiance and the Safety Minute with Bob Bauer. But before we do that, I'd like to share with you that I shared with Bob this morning that he has been so remarkable with his safety minutes that I remembered the last one, and so it'll be interesting. You know, I'm sure we'll remember this one too. So without further ado, Bob, for the Pledge of Allegiance.
No pressure there.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
My name is Bob Bauer, and I am the Education and Communication Specialist at Rocky Reach Visitor Center, and I want to invite you to go on a 30-second trip with me. We are leaving. It's December 21st, 2017, and we are heading toward Everett, and we are on Stevens Pass, and it is a very uneventful trip. You are in your car. Here we go. All of a sudden, you hear a bit of a rumble, and with that rumble, you see a bunch of white beginning to cover your car. You are in the middle of an avalanche. Four questions. Question number one, do you leave your seatbelt on, or do you take it off? You leave it on, because if the snow causes the car to tumble, if your seatbelt's not on, you could get traumatic injury. Number two, do you put your hands in front of your face and kind of cry for help, or do you just sit there and be bold? Actually, you put your hands in front of your face and cry for help, because if the windshield breaks, that protects your eyes. It also creates an air pocket just in case the snow were to come into the vehicle. Number three, do you leave your engine running, or do you turn it off? You turn it off. Some believe you actually leave it running because that way your car is on, you put it in gear and try to run through that avalanche. That's probably not going to happen. What will likely happen is carbon monoxide will build up and will kill you. Number four, do you try to escape your car and get away, or do you wait? And the answer is you wait, because help is usually on Stevens Pass or Snoqualmie Pass, just a matter of a few minutes away, believe it or not. So you wait. So you keep your seatbelt on, you put your hands in front of your face, you turn off your engine, and you wait for help. That's how you survive an avalanche. Now, probably not going to have an avalanche, but you probably will be going across the pass over the winter. So just some things that I never thought of, because I'm a tough guy. But when my 16-year-old daughter started driving in a Ford Tempo that I bought her, and I was sending her across the pass, all of a sudden the world changes. You must have your pre-driving preparations and then your in-car preparations. So before you ever take a trip across the pass in the wintertime, number one, make sure you have a full tank of gas. So when I pick up my dad from the Seattle airport, it takes me a little less than half a tank to get to Seattle airport. So I know that it only took me less than half a tank going over. So if I've got a little more than half a tank, I got plenty to get home. But if there's an accident and you get backed up on a December month and you sit in your car for a couple hours, it's nice to have enough gas to keep the car running, to keep the heat on. So before you leave, full tank of gas, windshield wiper reservoir full, good tires. Share your travel plans. I say that because I'm aware of a guy who won a $600,000 prize in a Georgia state lottery several years ago. On his way to the lottery office, he rolled off an embankment. His car rolled a few times. He wound up upside down in a deep ravine, And for 2 days, almost, well, 47 hours, just short of two full days, he was upside down, trapped in that car, injured with a $600,000 lottery ticket. And he thought he would never get to cash it in. So it is good to share your travel plans. Because if you go off in the snow, it's very easy for snow to cover your car very quickly, and people will drive right by you and not even know where you're at. So, and then finally, stock your car. And so this is what I brought for you today as my parting gift. This is a checklist. So if you don't do it for yourself, do it for your kids and your grandkids. I promise it'll make you feel better. It's all of those things that you want in your vehicle before you take a winter driving trip. I'm not going to give you all of the items because you'll have it on the list when I hand it to you. But I will tell you that kitty litter is very, very important in winter driving. You want that for traction in case you go off the road and just need it. So make sure kitty litter is in there too. I'll give you your list. Thank you for allowing me to share Safety Minute with you today.
Thanks, Bob. That's great.
Once again, it will be remembered, Bob.
Outstanding. Awesome. Yeah.
Anytime you punctuate your presentation with kitty litter, it's going to be remembered. That's a memory point.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Good job.
Birthday in an avalanche.
See, you remember when I came to hear about kitty litter?
Yes. Everybody stay off the road.
Oh, yeah.
December 21st.
For that.
So, commissioners, we have a proposed agenda before us. Are there any suggested changes that need to be made? I don't see any members of the public here this morning, so I don't know that there's any request for any additional items. Hearing none, the agenda will stand as presented to us. Item 3.
So, commissioners, what I'd like to do this morning is start with an update from Debbie Litchfield on the outcome of our recent discussions with Fitch and their rating, because I think it's relevant to the conversation we're going to have about budget. So, Kelly Boyd and Debbie Litchfield will present for us.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Debbie Litchfield, treasurer, and it's with great pride that I'm here today to share with you that we've received an update on our bond rating from Fitch Ratings, and it has been affirmed at AA plus stable outlook, and we remain as only a handful of AA plus Fitch rated utilities in the nation, so it's definitely something to be very, very proud of. We're pleased that the independent assessment that Fitch has conducted of the PUD places us as one of the highest rated utilities in the country. This is a terrific achievement and reflects the positive actions by you, the board, in all of the efforts that you've done with respect to the financial policies and the business planning activities. So thank you to the board for your guidance and direction on that. It takes all of the individual efforts of everyone at the district for us to be able to have this operational excellence and to achieve this very, very sought after rating. So it's all of the things that everybody here at the utility does on a day-to-day basis that has the results that we're seeing here. So credit goes to all of the employees for their contributions to this. I'd like to especially give some recognition to accomplishments of our core team. Kelly Boyd was my co-presenter when we discussed the information with Fitch. I would also like to recognize Heather Ireland and Mark Mullins, who were very instrumental in the development of our presentation that we provided to Fitch. I would also like to recognize support from Strategic Financial Planning and Energy Planning and Trading for their support and efforts with respect to our forecasting and the our hedge program and information that we shared on that. And also Sean Keats, our investment banker with Barclays, who provided very timely feedback and responses to some of the comparison of other utilities that you'll see in your packet. So just to give you a little bit of background, this update was initiated by Fitch as part of their biannual surveillance process that they go through. It is not as a result of bond financing activities that we have in the near term. Typically, whenever we do have a bond financing, all of the rating agencies will do a rating on those particular series of bonds. So this was just their regular biannual surveillance activities. Their last credit release of the district was in October of 2015. We continue to provide ongoing updates to the rating agencies throughout the year, even though we may not have formal reviews with them. So we keep them very informed of the activities that are going on at the district. We give them updates on some of our quarterly or semiannual updates from our financial perspective or any other key material type of information that we think is relevant for them to have. Our next formal review with Fitch is anticipated to be in 2019 or if a financing is planned earlier than that. So the presentation was conducted by conference call with myself and Kelly, and we presented information that's consistent with our business planning activities, and we continue to emphasize the key credit strengths of our low electric retail rates, our low-cost clean renewable hydropower, our strong risk management program, and we also showed our proven ability to achieve the things that we set out to do, even in light of some of the hydro challenges that we've seen in the more recent years. From our perspectives, the update went well and was well received by Fitch, and Fitch has also been very complimentary of the district and the materials and scenario planning that we provide to them. The result is the affirmation of the AA plus with a stable outlook, and in addition to the Fitch press release that you have in your packet, I've also included a summary that's a condensed rating report information that's in your is right up here, Ian, that packet there. So you should have, it has the Fitch press release that you have there in front of you. And then in the next page in the packet is just a condensed summary of the rating report information from all three of the rating agencies. For Moody's, which was their last review, was conducted in September 2016. Standard & Poor's, which was in May of 2016, and then more recently on the far right-hand side, you will see the update from Fitch that demonstrates our key strengths, challenges, and other actions and recommendations. So you'll have that information there for you to look at. So the Fitch press release has the information that basically outlined, citing a lot of the key strengths that the district has, including our valuable hydro resources, even noting the challenges that we've had with respect to some of the operational and also some of the market price eroding that we're seeing in the wholesale market, and that we can still have an advantage in the marketplace. The risk management of our cost-based and market-based wholesale sales was also cited as a strength. Our rapid debt reduction, which was a key strategic item for the board, as recognizing that as a customer focus is debt reduction, our strong financial performance. And then on the caution side, they did say that the reduced demand for our wholesale products for any reason, that it, should that occur, it could be, along with persistent low market prices, could result in some negative action. So it's important for us to continue with our efforts to work on our hedge program and looking out and doing our forecasting to ensure that we can remain on that strong and stable side. The next handout that's in your summary is the bond ratings for Washington State Municipal Power Utilities for a peer comparison of their ratings to the district, and it also includes those entities that are rated the same as us across the nation. On the other side of that handout, we've provided a summary of the long-term rating scales by each of the agencies, so you can see, because the rating scales are a little bit different. Fitch and Standard & Poor's use the same rating scale, but Moody's is a little bit different in the rating scale, so you can see that across the top of your page. And then it also provides a brief description of what each of the different ratings mean. So clearly, you know, when you look at that, you can see as a AA plus that Chelan is very viewed very, very strongly. So again, thank you to all of the staff, the management, and the board for your expertise, leadership, and guidance, and that contribute to us keeping the district as among the best of the utilities, as a rated utility in the best interest of our customer owners.
And of course, I wanted to join Debbie up here to recognize Debbie's leadership in this effort. She left her name off that list of all the people that contributed to this, and her leadership and expertise is instrumental in us maintaining these high ratings.
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions? I love the smile on your face. It makes my heart warm.
I just have to comment that this is an outstanding effort result. You guys do such a great job, your whole team, and it just points to the dedication of all of the staff and finance to shepherd us in this direction and help this become reality. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I guess just in light of taking a look at some things, particularly what's going on in Puerto Rico, one of the things you learn as a superintendent is it's really difficult to change programs for kids in schools if you don't have resources. And if you have strong financial resources, your end mission becomes very plausible, and then it's up to you to carry it out to make it the best for your customers. So the base that you guys have worked at and established financially has put us in that position where we can be of the highest level of service to our customers. And we're not looking at some of the things that other utilities look at. And it's your hard work and your thoughts and your professionalism that brings that about. And so that is the base resource for everything else that we do. And that's a cornerstone. Thank you.
Thank you.
You do it well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, from there, we're going to go on to a presentation on the five-year business plans. This is the annual update that we provide.
Yes.
And I want to reinforce that the really valuable, unique thing that I think our finance group provides to us is the long-term forecast look, a really detailed forecast look that you don't find every place. Both detailed in terms of the next 5 years and even a look out through 2027 to be able to cause us to be able to think about not just what's coming and the things that's clearly within the headlights, but the things that are out there that are a little bit more in the distance. And what you're going to see in these business plans is a bit of a transition, as we not so much because of what's in the five-year period, but more what's in the period beyond 5 years, the concerns that we have about the mid-2020s. So what we're going to cover today, this is following the same format that we used last year for this presentation. We'll talk about key drivers, including some of the important learnings that we have from this budget planning process. And I want to say that every budget planning process you go through and you learn a few things. And we've tried to identify those for you about things that are new that compared against previous years. We'll review our mission, vision, and objectives. And then talk about the key initiatives that we see coming in 2018 through 2022. I doubt that you will be surprised by those because they are things that we have generally talked about, but I think they reinforce how it is that we are pursuing the key objectives in our strategic plan, given what we now know. We'll talk about the known unknowns, things that are out there that we know something about, but we don't know enough in order to be able to include them in budgets, and therefore there are things that may well change between this plan and future plans. And then at the end of this, we will go through each business unit and describe their priorities and their initiatives relative to the strategic plan. Before we move on, Kelly, I want to say a couple of things about this. So the process that we used here was in the spring, we did our annual strategic plan update, and we provided that to the community. And that really is the foundation for our discussion of the business plans. I'd say the quick summary of that is we are in good shape in the near term. We're actually really in excellent shape in the near term, but we see some financial challenges in the longer term. It's like we're on a ship and we're sailing out in the ocean and the sun is shining on us right now. We can see some clouds out in the future. I'm not going to call them storm clouds because, candidly, the clouds that we see are the things that pretty much every other utility in the country deals with on a regular basis. We have been in a blessed period in which we have not had to deal with the problems that many others have had to deal with in terms of regular financial challenges, primarily because of the revenue from the wholesale market. But as we see a decline in that wholesale market, now we're moving into a period where we're going to look more like other utilities in terms of dealing with day-to-day challenges. We think that our strategic plan still works for us, that investing in assets and people and reducing debt have served us well in terms of preparing us for a period in which will be not as much wealth as what we have enjoyed over the last half dozen years. And we think that the public power benefit program at the crawl before you walk or run stage remains the right strategy to stay at the crawl. In part because remember that the reason we started the public power benefit program is there was we thought the expected value was that this utility would be producing a lot of revenue, and we had to figure out how to best use that. It's that seems less likely today, but not impossible, because just like markets go down, they can go back up again. And so the idea of being prepared both for worse financial conditions or better financial conditions, I think, still continues to make sense. Okay. So we put together the business plans, and I think you know our process. By the end of June, all the business units develop their business plans. They submit them. We total them all up. We look at what those totals mean. And then we get together as a senior management team. And in about August, we say, so what did we learn from all that? What's the biggest thing that came out of this? I think the thing that is the number one issue this year is, as we get better at asset management and we understand the state of our assets, and particularly in light of best for the most for the longest, the thinking about what investments we make if we're trying to create value for the long term around here, we're seeing more costs than we had seen before, and candidly a better understanding that we have been underinvesting in our assets, that we have been operating on more of a short-term philosophy. We were reasonably good at understanding our hydro assets, and so we've been advancing that, maturing that. We had less maturity in terms of understanding our assets in other parts of our business. So what's happening is we're moving through a maturation phase, and as we move through that, we're discovering more assets that actually we have the opportunity to be able to invest in them to create value over the next 30 to 50 years. So what that leads to is the potential for certainly increases in costs in the near term to be able to create that long-term value. Best example of that, I think, is the presentation that you got at the last meeting on distribution infrastructure and where we stand in terms of our need both to maintain the reliability that we have at least cost over the long term, as well as what we are seeing in terms of increasing load growth. We are seeing continued change in power markets and lower wholesale prices, and we'll show you some numbers in a moment, but we did see further decline in the wholesale power markets in the course of the last 12 months. There's some signals that that may be coming to an end, but I will tell you there are also some signals that it could be extended for a longer period of time and that we might see even lower prices over the course of the next decade. So it's hard to predict where that one's going to go. Are seeing, last year we provided to you the long-term debt philosophy, and we said, so we are now beginning to see a need to get back into the borrowing market in the early 2020s at some point. That comes forward even a little bit in terms of our thinking about this plan, and we are thinking more about revenue management. So what do we need to do in terms of rates? And the key issue there really is that we are seeing increasing costs of serving county load growth. Our basic fundamental distribution system costs are increasing, and we've been masking those increases in costs with additional revenues. Having said all that, the good news is our financial policies continue to work for us, and we meet all of our financial metrics over the course of the next 5 years. So our challenge here is really not the five-year challenge. It's the period beyond that. How do we set ourselves up for it? So I would call this the preparing for the 2020 budget. Let's walk through some numbers for a moment here. We did this last year for you as well. We talked about what's different since the strategic plan. First of all, the bottom line in the expected value case is down about $100 million in the period through 2022. And down over $400 million in the period through 2027. That is primarily as a result of wholesale revenues. You can see the numbers there, roughly $80 million in the near-term period and $360 million through 2027. So the big issue, and it's not a surprise, when 80% of your revenues come from the wholesale market, they tend to be the big driver in anything that's going on around here. The biggest issue in terms of the decline is associated with the decline in prices. And you can see the numbers at the bottom there. They represent about a 45% reduction in price compared against last year, compared against the strategic plan. Last year, it was about a 38% reduction in price. So we saw further about 7% decline in prices over the course of the last 12 months. Our operating expenses are increasing as we address the issues that are really coming out of asset management. How do we provide best value for the longer term? Our capital expenditures are actually not increasing very much, and that's a combination of two things. So, interestingly enough, asset management doesn't always drive costs up. Sometimes it drives costs down. So some of our expectations with respect to modernization of the Rock Island Powerhouse 2 have changed over the course of the last year as we've come to understand better the condition of those assets are not necessarily as dire as what we had originally thought. On the other hand, you saw the presentation last week with respect to distribution costs, and we are seeing increases in costs associated with trying to maintain reliability and serve load growth there. All of that translates into a decrease in liquidity, although one of the things that's happening here is that we are beginning to address the liquidity concerns by assuming that we will either not make accelerated debt repayments or get into the borrowing market in that 2020s, 2022 beyond period. Our debt ratios are important to understand here. So our goal had been to get to below 35%. By 2022, the budget here assumes that we will continue to decrease debt down to around the 20% level. And then we would maintain that level at about a 20% debt to equity ratio through the 2027 period. So it's important to understand that we use debt refinancing as really a way to create financial flexibility. And that financial flexibility is continuing to be generated in this budget. And one of the difficult questions that I was asked by many of you as board members when I first got here was, how far do we go in terms of debt reduction? That was really not a problem for us because we could do all the things we wanted to do and continue to reduce debt. We're now at the point where we are going to need to challenge this, at least come to a conclusion about that. What is it that we want in terms of debt-to-equity ratio? And fundamentally, the trade-off that we have is in terms of investments for things that will create long-term value. So we're now reaching one of those points where we get to address some of our key values, what's important to us around here. I'm going to reiterate a couple of things because I just think they're so important to this budget that it's worth saying a couple of times. So first of all, the declining wholesale market is really having a substantial impact on revenues. Recall that we had the five-year slice sales. So for the first few years of that declining market, we were hedged and basically not seeing the real impact. We're now about 3 years into this declining market. And as we put in place new five-year slice sales, it's creating more impact that we can see within the budget period. So we're losing the advantage of the hedges as time moves on. We have capital and O&M cost increases due to asset investment strategies and unplanned generation turbine outages. You'll see as you get to generation and transmission description, the big challenge that we have with the Rocky Reach units and now Rock Island B1 through 4 in the next few years really dominates the landscape in terms of what we'll be doing in the generation and transmission arena. We do see the use of borrowing in our headlights. I don't think this is a big surprise after the discussion about long-term debt philosophy last year, but we do see that coming in the early 2020s, and as we have declining revenues and some increase in costs, that pushes that need for addressing the borrowing issues, either through reduced accelerated debt repayment or through borrowing into an earlier period within the planning horizon. We had talked last year about needing to do some early revenue management planning for worst-case scenarios, and I want to make sure we define worst-case scenarios because there's really two definitions here. The first is just if things continue to get worse, the wholesale market gets worse, whether we have more unplanned outages on our system, things that cause revenues to decline or costs to increase. But the second is the issue that the board has expressed concern about as well is another worst-case scenario is if we put ourselves in a position of having to do regular double-digit rate increases through time and trying to do enough planning ahead of time to be able to avoid the consequences of those kinds of rate increases. So we see revenue management issues as coming earlier in the planning scenario to address both of those potential concerns. We are trying to prepare, I would say, the system support for customers today for a changing tomorrow. And the quote that I would look to on this is Henry Ford's, if I had asked my customers what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse. We are not necessarily just asking customers what they want, but thinking about what they will expect from us in the next couple of years. Because technology is changing so quickly that we know that if we don't keep up, that customers will come to realize that they are, that other utilities are providing services that we are not able to provide. And our very high customer satisfaction numbers will slip at that point. So this is where we get to thinking about automated metering infrastructure, outage management, and other issues that will make sure that we can maintain our very high level of customer satisfaction scores. Our declining net revenues required us to put more time into thinking about our strategic priorities. I will tell you that at the end of that, we concluded that strategic priorities are still correct for today. At least this budget is built around that concept. And that's something that I think can be debated as we go through the budgeting process. We have, though, tightened our planning to more closely reflect our capital and O&M spending expectations. So we're working harder in terms of understanding, can we actually do all the work that we have in these budgets? Because if we can't, then we are assuming that we will need to take actions that may not be necessary because we just are unable to accomplish all the spending that's included there. That has led us to think more about do we have, in fact, the right level of budget. And as we move closer, we said the same thing last year, as we move closer to expected value budgeting, we hope that you will understand that that means it's more likely that we will come in with budgets that exceed the budget amount. Because if you don't have a lot of contingency in your budget, and if things arise along the way, then you're more likely to exceed the budget amount. So we're trying to move closer to a expected value budget than a budget that has some room inside of it to deal with contingencies. These plans retain the priorities for adjusting individual project schedules and priorities. There is no change to focus on reinvesting in assets and people. I want to really emphasize this. But one of the choices could be, well, let's not invest the best for the most for the longest. We have not chosen to make that change in this budget. We continue to, if there are things that we believe create value for the long term, then we seek to pursue them here up to the point where within the resources that we have available to accomplish. We continue to see reducing debt to achieve less than a 35% debt ratio. We'll talk more about some of the specifics in that in a moment. Although we do have a specific question, in the past we've said we think that we could accomplish that a year early in 2018 versus 2019. Turns out that payment in 2018 is associated with variable interest rate debt, not fixed rate debt, consequently has less advantage to us than some of the others. So we're giving some more thought to whether we want to prepay the 2018 debt or just move to 2019 in terms of trying to hit our goal. And as I said earlier, we retain the philosophy of staying at the crawl level, and we are not proposing new solicitations for 2018 for the Public Power Benefit Program. You'll see that we have underspent public power benefit every year so far. We are on a path to underspend the budget amount this year, but it's in the $3.3 out of $4 million level, something like that. We have retained our vision to be valued as an innovative, trusted, and highly respected public utility for generations to come, and given more thought to the word innovation in there, actually identified a specific program add to this budget to try to encourage more innovation in the utility, and our mission to provide sustainable, reliable utility services that enhance the quality of life in Chelan County. We particularly emphasize the second part of that, that our fundamental goal here is to enhance the quality of life for people who live here. We have retained our values, the safety, protecting public employee health and safety, trustworthiness, competence, integrity, and respect, stewardship, acting on behalf of customer owners, protecting public resources entrusted to us, and operational excellence, the focus on high-quality, innovative work execution. And as I said earlier, we've retained the strategic goals of continuing our debt reduction efforts, reinvesting in core assets and people, and initiating the Public Power Benefit Program, and maintaining that Public Power Benefit Program. We don't spend as much time talking about the balanced scorecard these days, but we did give some thought to, is there a need for a change here, and concluded that, in fact, this is still working for us. We start with committing to the highest level of customer owner satisfaction as the basis for every decision that we make around here, along with recognizing that there are some natural resource operational issues that we are responsible for managing that are bigger than just this county, our fish responsibilities being a good example of that. We want to continue to stay focused on ensuring our financial stability and meeting our metrics. We're looking to make continuous improvement in efficient, effective, compliant, and risk-assessed operations. I want to particularly emphasize the risk-assessed piece. You'll find that, in particular, we have some increased emphasis on cybersecurity risk in this budget as we are trying to address what is a rapidly evolving world, and investing in creating long-term value. We have continued to focus, and you'll see in our initiatives, enhancing the capability of Chelan PUD staff. We think that the world that the utilities are operating in this day requires an increased level of skills. We see a lot of stuff coming at us still in terms of regulatory requirements and expectations of the public for providing services out of the utility business. And we want to continue to make our values the focus in terms of our relationships with customers, stakeholders, and each other. So we are not recommending a change with respect to the balanced scorecard. In terms of district initiatives, I mentioned earlier that the Rocky Reach Large Unit Repairs and Rock Island Modernization, when you look at the staggering amount of work that is going on at those two projects relative to what would normally go on in this utility, it is the focus for the next couple of years. And the capability that we have of the system in terms of units that are operating and available for service, we hope to increase substantially over the course of the next 5 years. Kirk will talk more about that. We are focused on upgrading our customer information system. So we know that this core system that is responsible for the way we touch every customer, our billing system, is no longer serviced by the vendor and needs to be updated. And at the same time, we want to move forward with advancing two-way metering capabilities. And I should have said at the beginning of this that all this is not a perfect list of priorities. Generally a sense of what are the most important things that we're going to be trying to accomplish in 2018 in particular. We feel a need to increase our activities with respect to distribution service, both the reliability for existing loads as well as load growth, and that is driving the cost of distribution services up. We do have to address the restructured Mid-Columbia hourly coordination plan. So we know that both Grant and Douglas have chosen to not continue to participate in hourly coordination. What we're not clear on at this point is what the revenue impacts of that are going to be. We suspect that many of the things that go on under hourly coordination will be continued in the future. But at this point, we don't know which of those services will be continued. If there is a dramatic change, and let's say none of them were to be included, then it would be ultimately a decrease in our revenues, we believe. So we need to work through that in terms of understanding what the actual services are that the other participants in hourly coordination will want to continue. We want to continue to develop our employees to achieve safety goals and operational excellence for high reliability operations. You saw a presentation on this at the last meeting. And we want to implement a forward-looking talent management strategy to cultivate a future-ready workforce that is compensation based on market. And I will tell you, this is a bit of a change in that in the past, we've talked a lot about succession planning here. We expect to have some succession plans in place for all employees by the end of the year. So we're moving away from that focus and more towards how do we make sure that we have the right talent to be able to address our concerns over the course of the next 5 years and, again, preparing for the 2020 challenges that we see coming. We are continuing to advance our asset management discipline, and in the course of that, I think, although we don't struggle with it completely in this budget, I suspect we will in future years, we will begin to address the questions of can we afford it all? How much does it all cost, and can we do all of these things? We have further diversification of our wholesale portfolio. You saw this in particular this year with the Avista sale. It's the first of our long-term sales. We expect to be coming back to the board later this year with a resolution to guide us with respect to where we want to go with our future wholesale power marketing program. Do we want to begin to address more long-term sales as we see the end of the Alcoa contract in 2027 and even the potential end of the Puget contract in the 2031 period? So we're going to think through what happens when you have those big quarter of our revenue contracts that are coming up. How do we begin to position for those? We are implementing long-term planning strategies for facilities, but I want to underscore the fact these are not included in these budgets. So we have not had enough discussion with the board about facilities plans. We're looking at a variety of different options for phasing, as we had committed to you. We expect to be bringing that back even later this month to begin that conversation. Because we had not brought that to more of a conclusion with you, they are not included in these budgets. We're working to evolve business intelligence capabilities to become a more data-driven organization. That ties back to the workforce that we need, that we see needing in the coming years. We're developing the regional water supply strategy, and we put this one up here particularly because it's the biggest issue for the water system. Do we want second source for water system? And it is the would be the single biggest driver with respect to rates in the course of the next 5-year period. We're updating the telecommunication system, and you'll see a resolution later today that moves forward with that. This is a follow-on to a presentation that we made to you in February as we are dealing with an outdated and outmoded microwave system and trunk radio system. It's actually a fairly good example of places where we have underinvested and probably gone too long in terms of waiting to make an investment here. So a critical system for us in terms of reliability of many parts of our system, not just the electric system, but also water. We hope to complete the cost-effective wastewater compliance improvements. Of course, that's dependent upon the state capital budget, which we're still waiting to hear what will happen with that and the grant funding that's associated with the Peshastin project. We plan to exceed the energy efficiency requirements because those capture long-term value for us as well. And you may recall we did a presentation for you earlier this year on how we protect transmission lines against fire and weather, and we begin to take actions in this budget to implement some of those activities that were identified there. So those are the big project initiatives, but it's important to understand that our other two strategic objectives we continue to pursue as well. So on the debt reduction side, we are continuing with the annual evaluation and decision-making process, but we expect to achieve the debt ratio of less than 35% by 2019. Just to put this in context, we were at over $1.1 billion of debt a few years ago. We're down to, at this point, about $537 million. So we've essentially cut the debt in half. And it's important to understand that in this half dozen or so really good financial years that we've had, the number one thing that money went for is debt reduction. So you take the $550 million. When people say, where did the money go? I think you can pretty quickly point to $550 million went to debt reduction to put us in a better position to be able to deal with the challenges that other utilities normally have to deal with. Where do we stop? As I mentioned earlier, I think that's a fairly big question that we're going to be dealing with a little bit through this budget, but probably more over the course of the next year. Where is the right place for us to go? And how do we make those trade-offs relative to investments that create long-term value? And a question that I know comes up at other utilities, hasn't come up as much here, is the whole question of intergenerational equity. So what is the appropriate amount for this generation to pay for the benefit of future generations? Yeah. Of course, past generations made large investments that have benefited this generation. So we are a bit unique in terms of our philosophy in terms of utility operations here. But that will be a part of this discussion about how far do we go with respect to where do we want our debt-to-equity ratio to end up.
Steve, the debt reduction started in 2010.
In terms of the Public Power Benefit Program, there are a few things that are teed up in this budget. We continue the fiber system expansion. I don't think there's any surprise there, given the direction from this board. And we continue the program for parks passes, the cost of which has continued to come down relative to our initial estimates. We advanced the hydro research program, as discussed in the spring. We really are increasingly excited about this program. We think that we are onto something that we are seeing a lot of support for across the industry, and we're seeing that there doesn't appear to be something else out there that replicates the work that we're doing here, at least not in the way that we're doing it. And the program that the board approved for the enhancements to the Rocky Reach Visitor Center are included here. I would also add to this list, you recall the presentation that Lorna Klemanski gave about a month ago with respect to educational support for educational programs. It's really a small part of this, not very many dollars, but it's in here as well in terms of activities. This budget assumes that we will continue the $4 million that has annually been budgeted, but I will remind the board that we have not spent that amount so far in any year. In terms of known unknowns, the biggest one at this point is the timing of additional costs for the facilities master plan. Where do we want to go with that, and particularly phasing options that will be available to the board? Challenges in electric market fundamentals and pricing. I'll just give you a couple of examples. On last Friday, we got notice that the California ISO has decided to basically run a subsidy program for storage down there. That is certainly disappointing to us. The way it's structured, it doesn't appear to allow that same advantage to come to imported hydro. So we see some risk and some worries there. On the other hand, the Secretary of Energy released a report that says that the FERC needs to take immediate action to support capacity resources. He focused on coal and nuclear, although there is a brief mention of hydro in the letter that he sent to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and there is certainly opportunity there. And the original DOE report that was underlying this letter that was sent speaks to the need to make sure that there is capacity, including hydro capacity. So there's things going on all the time around here. Friday just happens to be an example of how the market is shifting on us, and particularly how government intervention is affecting the market that we're dealing with. We'll see new information with respect to results of our asset conditions. We learned a lot this year. We are going to learn more by next year. We continue to, as we mature the program, find out more and more about the state of our assets. We know that there will be another decision with respect to Alcoa. They put in place a one-year agreement last year, so there's a restart decision there. And should they choose to not restart the plant, there are transmission issues that potentially need to get addressed, because you have a big sink for all that energy right now that goes away. You've got to be able to move that energy someplace, and we're trying to figure out, working with Columbia Grid, what the options are with respect to transmission if Alcoa were to shut down. We have a lot of changing regulatory and licensing requirements. I'll put licensing out there. We're very hopeful with respect to the Congress addressing the relicensing bill that's now pending. But that leads to opportunities. For example, if our early action credit legislation were enacted, that creates some opportunities for us to address some issues. If it's not enacted, then we are stuck in the same position of any actions that we take early on, there is no reward for. Reliability compliance continues to change around us significantly. We are hopeful. We are very much engaged in a discussion about whether there are ways to be able to accomplish reliability compliance in a more efficient way. There is discussion at the national level around this. We are seeking to be a voice, at least, in part of that discussion. We see a lot of changing load growth. We've seen increasing load growth. Essentially, over the course of the last 2 years, our load growth forecast has nearly doubled. So we're now addressing the issues that come with more load growth in the area. And we see a lot of different ways that electricity is being used. So we see more second homes. We see more localized growth. We see certainly in the Chelan area a lot of growth, in the Leavenworth area a lot of growth. So we're trying to make sure that we understand that. But candidly, it's very difficult to forecast where this growth will occur. And so then there's a reactive issue that occurs. We are discouraged, but still hopeful on the Columbia River Treaty. There certainly has been a change there with respect to a new lead negotiator that supposedly is going to come on board in October. And we hope that that will lead to more progress than we have seen in the last couple of years. That, we believe, has probably mostly upside potential for us, and so we'd like to see that realized. We continue to be concerned about the risk of having one dominant fiber retail service provider on our system, and are hoping to see more retail service providers become use our system. We're worried about our ability to compete for and retain top talent, because it is a like a lot of issues, the biggest challenges here are with respect to those things that require STEM knowledge. And there is a lot of competition for that knowledge, not just in the utility industry, but across all industries. We are trying to think through the climate change impacts, both from the physical side and the political side. The physical side being, if we have forecasts of how weather will change, then what, How does that translate through for us in terms of load forecasts, stream flow forecasts, stream flow temperature forecasts, all things that are important to us? So we will have some work that we expect to be incorporating in the next set of business plans. And also on the political side, the fact of the matter is we are an industry that used to be driven by least cost to meet load reliably. We are now an industry that's driven by greenhouse gas emissions, state, federal, and local policies. And so the political side has probably as much impact as just about anything else in terms of what our future cost structure is going to be, cost and revenues. We're finding that increased stakeholder engagement lengthens the timeline and resource requirements that we have. Chelan Sub is certainly a great example of that, but it can't be understated. We will not be able to do that level of engagement without more people to do it. It takes a lot of people to put these kinds of processes in place. And we worry about the frequency of natural disasters such as fires and storms and how frequently they will come along. So known unknowns generally are all the things that are bad and that you worry about. They tend to be a depressing list. On the other hand, I want to finish with the fact that while we do have these challenges in the 2020s, we still are a pretty remarkable utility from a financial standpoint. In the five-year period, for our key financial metrics, we continue to see the ability to remain above our target for liquidity of $175 million. Our coverage ratios are quite good, above the industry average for large public power council utilities. Our debt ratio here, this plan is built around getting under 32% in 2018. I mentioned earlier we're going to debate the question of whether we should actually take out the 2018 debt, whether that's the creating best value for the long term. But we do expect to get below 35% by 2019. By the way, the average LPPC utility, large public power council utility, has a debt-to-equity ratio probably in the 55 to 60% range. Okay. We are definitely on the low side here relative to our peers. And days cash on hand at greater than 285 days is also better than our industry peers. So this is still a great picture for the course of the next 5 years. And the good news is, because we have such strong financial analysis here, we are able to think ahead to the longer term and be able to make choices about how we want to position for the coming challenges in the 2020s. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Kelly to go through some of the really important numbers with respect to the financials and some of the specifics there.
Thank you, Steve. So I am going to transition a little bit from that five-year look to look at that longer-term look, which is really about a direction and a path to be on. It is definitely difficult to forecast way out into the future with a lot of moving parts to it. So really what the long-term forecast tells us is a direction. Are we headed in that right direction? Just like Commissioner Bull's question about the debt reduction plans, in our 2010 to 2014 a long-term plan, that's where we started those plans of wanting to change the way we go about debt. But a lot of the driver was our old contracts, our old power contracts. They required us to bond for those. So we had opportunity after those expired in 2011 and 2012 to really change our philosophy. That philosophy carried into our 2015 to 19 strategic plan. And this was our long-term forecast that you see here. I think everyone's familiar with it now because we like to anchor back to it quite often. This long-term forecast didn't include any new debt issues. And it really, as you look at our blue line, which is our expected case, that's a very positive and above our liquidity minimums. And that was with no new debt. But there were still things in our future like Powerhouse 2 rehabilitation. That's one of those things that would maybe make sense to bond for that type of rehabilitation. And so the dotted line here just represented what liquidity would even look like if we made some decisions about financing some appropriate capital projects. Our brown line that we affectionately colored it and named it was that low case scenario of what if things turned out a lot lower. And you see that we crossed that liquidity line in the 2019 time period of what if things didn't turn out like we thought. So when we translate this into what it looks like now, the light lines retain what that looked like. The bold lines are our current forecast. So as we currently forecast, you can see that our dark blue line here, which is our expected case, now finds us assuming that we will issue debt to maintain our liquidity in, you know, that 2023-ish, mid-2020 timeframe like Steve talked about. So as we look to the future now, we do see in this planning horizon where issuing new debt, it looks like it would be a part of our overall planning. And that we would do that in our forecast to maintain our liquidity. So this anchors back to our debt philosophy that we set, that the board set earlier, of planning to use debt for flexibility and to help us maintain our financial liquidity. If we were to experience our what-if case of a low revenue scenario, you can see that that would be around 2021-ish that would have us looking at having new debt in our future to maintain our liquidity. So when we look at these dark lines here, you can see that they are in the middle of our old lines. So while our expected case has diminished, our what if a low revenue scenario was going to happen is still within those range, the range that we set. And that's because of the steps we've taken since then, like more hedges in place for these time periods, debt reduction that does lower our interest, for example, that we pay on that. So we're still operating within the bounds of that range that was set in the original 2015 to 2019 plan. But we do see that there are more elements in our future and in our planning horizon. And when we look down into that, another step deeper too, and one of the items looking at our water, wastewater, and fiber systems, during that strategic planning 2015 to 2019, we did seek out customer input on these smaller systems because the smaller systems are a challenge to run at a affordable rate and cost efficiency because they're high capital needs with a small customer base. And the feedback that we got at that time was that the community did value our ability to provide those services and viewed them as important for the for us to provide and also to help temper the reliance on rates. So at that time, a funding action was taken for 2015 through 2019 to transfer funds to fiber, water, and wastewater to cover their planned capital needs during that time frame and to cover their share of shared assets, which are things like this building where everyone stays in this building when we buy new computer systems and everyone uses those systems, everyone gets a share of those. Those are the types of shared capital. So through the 2019 timeframe, funding was provided so that rates don't need to be relied upon from those small systems to cover those items. And then earlier this summer, when we were updating our financial policies for these smaller business lines, we needed to look beyond the 2019 and that funding that was provided because we've extended our planning horizon now beyond that. And so the board did set the board philosophy that the shared capital items, that there would be planned funding, and that's how we would forecast it for those small systems share of the shared type assets like buildings, computer systems. So what this shows you is just the magnitude of those that type of funding, just for that good awareness. of, and that these are in the, for fiber 2020, for example, that's 148,000 is their percentage share of the shared capital funding. Water's being 36,000, and wastewater is actually not allocated any of those shared costs to start with. So that just gives you a feel as we look into the future of that level of funding of from the electric system so that it eases the pressure on rates to pay for those types of items. For water and wastewater, their direct capital, and so capital improvements needed in their own systems, those were just identified as a annual decision to be made by the board of how those would be funded. So we don't have an assumption in the forecast that they would be funded by means other than rates, but it is something that we would want to highlight because there will be future decision making by the board of whether they would choose to fund those in that manner. So what this shows in the bottom two lines of this table is that in the 2021 and 2022 timeframes, we do see pressure on both the water and wastewater systems and their ability to pay for their direct capital. So we've highlighted that for awareness for this as part of this, you know, look forward and knowing that there will be a need for additional discussion, additional board decision making and additional board approval, but it would be out in the 2021 timeframe as we look at it now. So this is one of those early warning signs and early heads up so we can have this in our planning horizon. Similar early awareness around our debt philosophy as it applies to the hydros. So the primary funding mechanisms for our hydro systems through our cost plus contracts are our debt reduction charge and our capital reduction charge, affectionately called DRC and CRC. We haven't had a chance to talk about those much lately, but we currently have those as those are two of the plus charges on the cost plus contracts, and they are both set at the maximum rate and have been through the contract term. We had done work previously where we set thresholds where maybe those could be reduced in the future when the funds reached a certain level. And in forecasting at that time, we forecasted a possibility that there would be some of that. But as we look at our hydro capital plans now, and those plans have moved up sooner at a higher level, so we do see those funds actually in 2019 not being enough to cover the 2019 capital expenditures. So that's why you see a yellow highlight in that year. That's the first year where those funds will not be adequate to pay as we go based on current forecasting. Same as our other items, though, we have a lot of decision making that we can do around these. And internal funding from our consolidated system is one of those options, or maybe additional external financing. So this is another area to highlight that this is a change from our capital planning from the last business planning cycle last year, that we will have additional decision making around funding of capital items. And 2022, the funds are adequate just to kind of show how this table works. But 2021 and 2022, again, there would be a need for additional decision making around how to fund these through internal or external loans. So again, not a decision point for today, but a good awareness issue because it is in our planning horizon. And then just recently in July, we did do one dive deeper into the details around our retail electric system and adding new metrics to give us another level of detail looking at that system and testing out some new metrics. So these are the new metrics. Again, we're in the testing phase to see if these metrics tell us about actions that we should be looking at, give us those early warning signs that are we in the right balance when we're looking at our retail electric? Just like Steve described earlier about knowing that we have increased investments needed to maintain that highly reliable system and provide the customer services we believe they will come to expect. So we see that there's some yellow on this page. So the retail total cost ratio is one that tells us of we know that we use both rates and wholesale sales to cover the cost of operating the retail electric system. And we want to make sure we keep the right balance. The first line of retail total cost includes the balance with O&M and capital. So what are the needs for both of those and what's covered through rates and what's covered through wholesale sales. So we're our target there is 65%. We're just above it until the end of this five-year planning horizon where we fall just below it. For the retail O&M cost ratio, that's just zeroing in on just O&M. So it takes kind of capital out of the picture. Again, just another look. Targeting that 90% of O&M would be covered by rates, the remainder covered by wholesale sales. And you see yellow on this one of just below for 2018 through 2020, but then come back in line and then fall below again. So what this is telling us, again, these are right around it. We were testing out these to see if they're the right threshold. And this planning cycle just brings these more into light of being right around it sooner than even in the summer when we were setting these thresholds. Our retail electric gap changes percentages to dollars, so we can also get that feel of how much dollars are we relying on and from wholesale sales to fill the gap that's not filled by retail rates. And for that, when we set a threshold that started at $25 million in 2017 dollars and then increased by CPI over time, thinking that we would kind of remain at this gap, but recognize that it would grow by inflation. And $25 million inflated over time is what that one is. So that's the line. This line is our target. And then that retail gap, we want to stay below that because, again, we don't want to get too high dollar reliance on that. And we're just a little bit above it. And then again, in 2021, we fall back in line with the CPI increase target and then fall below. So, again, just telling us that this is a awareness, something to look at as we test these out. And the market-based margin target is really looking at our margin that's being provided by wholesale sales and wanting to make sure the wholesale sale margin stays above the $25 million threshold. And the wholesale sales does stay above that in our forecasting period. So what that tells us, it's not necessarily the decrease in wholesale sales to contribute to our balance. It's the increase in cost, O&M and capital, that's needed to have the proper reinvestment in the system to keep it highly reliable. So really, this is the testing out of it is designed to tell us that we do have some awareness here that we would want us to be paying attention to this now. And the revenue management is an element of that of now it's coming into our planning horizon, so we can do it early and in small incremental steps if it comes to that. And this is where that awareness is telling us that we're stressing these thresholds. Commissioner Bowles, did you have
Kelly, just a back of the envelope, retail 3% increase yields approximately what annually? How much annually?
So $50 million is our base. So the 3% would be the $1.5 million.
Okay. Thank you.
So and so this is, again, that what is our planning telling us as we look ahead? It's telling us that we want to be aware of our retail electric system and that we are just right around these initial targets. And they were designed to be those early indicators. Because we want to take action early to keep small incremental changes over time. So again, it's not the purpose of this is not to take action now. It's to be aware of that there could be those actions in our planning horizon. And kind of related to that same train of thought, previously the commissioners did ask about what has been our electric rate increase history and how does that compare to what it would have been if we would have kept up with inflation. So what this graphic is showing is that this is the solid red line is what electric rates increases have been. There have been just that three since 2000, but that over time, that's a 9% cumulative increase since 2000 to 2016. If electric rates would have just increased at inflation during that time period, it would have been a 39% cumulative increase, which is the dashed blue line. So the message is that over this period of time, 30% of this has remained in our customer pockets for their discretionary use because of keeping those electric rates low and affordable. As Steve mentioned too, we want to be clear that long-term facilities planning is not yet in these forecasts because the plan is still underway. But the status of it is you'll be hearing more about it in a couple weeks at a board presentation. And there has been a lot of study over the last couple years. And the conclusion is that new facilities would be expected to enhance the customer experience and create operational efficiencies and productivity gains. So the study did conclude that new facilities, when compared to our current philosophy of kind of doing reactive maintenance, just-in-time maintenance, that by having new facilities, there would be a net positive present value when you compare those two things. That's one of those reasons why it makes sense for us to move forward with the long-term facilities plan. But I do want to put one more level of understanding to that. Whether we continue our current philosophy of reactive maintenance or do a new facilities plan, the current forecasts don't forecast the adequate level for either one of those philosophies. Even reactive maintenance, we would need to increase the amount of investment in maintenance and facilities when compared to what we currently have in the long-term forecast. So either way, more work would be needed and more costs would need to be included in a forecast for long-term facilities planning. But we do have the starting to plan ahead by the board with the initial savings of $20 million in the designated long-term facilities plan to start saving for those future needs. And we will continue to fine-tune the scope and timing for board recommendation and then additional public outreach related to the long-term facilities planning. So we will wait and update the forecast until we have kind of that approved plan to properly update the long-term forecast.
So I think with that, we're ready to turn to the business unit plans, but I want to just check with you and see whether you have questions for Kelly or for me before we go to the individual business unit plan.
Good. I have a question back. Kelly, back a page on 21. Just clarification, that 39% cumulative, that would have put rates at, what, 3.9 cents?
I can translate that into a cents per kilowatt hour and get back to you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
No, just a comment that, you know, when your rates are essentially 3% of 3.2, it's not like other utilities when they do 3% of 8 or 9 cents, you know, so it's more difficult for us to raise cash that way, which is a good thing for the customer.
And it definitely goes to our kind of our theme of keeping in balance,
yeah,
because we want to be able to do manageable action.
Yeah.
Good.
I'd like to take a 30-second stand up and turn around in place and sit back down.
Okay.
You bet. Let's come back together, and we're going to get started again.
Seniors in the Catholic Church. I'm firing your best friend.
Kirk, you don't need an introduction.
You should tell me what
you go.
Okay. Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission, here to talk about Generation and Transmission business plan over the next 5 years. As Steve mentioned earlier, our big focus over the next 5 years is modernizing our tremendously valuable hydro asset fleet. We've got a lot of work that's been planned, designed, and we're in the implementation phase over the next 5 years. Here's how we'll make a difference. We're going to further implement operational excellence principles and training for employees. We'll further develop our asset management program, and I'll get into each one of these a little bit more. Going to safely complete the planned scope of work for the major hydro modernization effort. We're going to maintain our exceptional transmission system availability, and we're going to maintain compliance with reliability and critical infrastructure protection standards. So following right along on the one-page business plan, if you want to follow along. The punchline, in essence, is the hydro modernization efforts. It's going to be a tremendous amount of effort over the next 4 years. Just to put it in context for you, with a fleet of 31 units across our three hydro projects and an estimated design life of about 40 years, you could argue that we'd be doing about, on average, one unit per year. Next year alone, we'll be doing four units in 1 year at one time. And in the next 4 years, we'll have modernized 10 units. So we have a tremendous amount of work in front of us on that hydro asset side. Toward the end of the planning period, we'll actually be starting, and we expect to be starting our Powerhouse 2 modernization as well. So our big effort there that we're currently processing, planning on. In terms of what you would expect to see for results, when we look at our hydro reliability numbers, a capability number is one that we are tracking. We expect next year to have about 66% of our capability available to operate, and by the end of 2020, we would have that number up to about 89%. So that's the work we have in front of us and what we expect to get out of it. We'll continue to develop our asset management capabilities. Mainly what we're doing right now is identifying which assets are most critical. And that's not just the units themselves. It's operating a hydro project, including spillways and gates and those types of things, cranes. So we're developing our replacement and maintenance strategies on all those assets. We'll be implementing our succession planning strategy for our hydro operators. We've got 21 operators as our baseline number of hydro operators, and we expect 9 of those will be eligible to retire in the next 2 years. So. Yeah, we're going to see quite a loss of institutional knowledge there. We are implementing that plan as we speak. We'll begin facilities improvements. You've seen the Rock Island storage building. That's the first project out of the gate. Might even be as early as later this year. So we'll begin the facilities improvement effort on the hydro side. We'll continue to make progress on the hydro research front by constructing a data analytics platform. It's going to help us gather all this information that we're collecting from the units and analyze it and to improve our predictive capability to see things that might be going wrong with the units before they happen. We'll continue to advance the operational excellence and safety culture through human performance. We've got two major fronts that we're focused on. One is instilling ownership of the pre-task planning process at the employee level, where the work is taking place. The other one is to expand our use of learning teams when things don't go as we expect. We want to really develop a learning culture where we drive towards processes, what's going on in our processes. And then there's a couple of notables that aren't in our business plan per se, but they're important enough. I wanted to mention them. One Steve touched on already was our effort to see what we can do to improve efficiency on the NERC and WEC reliability side. Just the number of standards and requirements there. Our desire is that we move forward on a risk-based approach where we spend more time on the higher risks and less time on the lower risks. And then also our efforts to improve the quality and the life of our hydro assets. We've seen a number of issues across the board, whether they're design issues, whether they're construction issues, quality issues. So we're making an effort to see what we can do to work with our vendors and improve all aspects of the hydro design life. Some of the risks we'll be managing over the business plan horizon, the high volume of projects, that's not lost on us. There's more work than we've ever done before at one time coming up right in front of us. So that is a risk we're managing. Storms or fires that could affect transmission system reliability, we're all aware of what could happen at a moment's notice there. New and changing regulatory requirements that challenge our costs. And cybersecurity is becoming more and more an issue front and center for us to manage risk on. And then one thing I wanted to mention, just in terms of as you're approaching the budget, the timing of our reinvestment, our modernization efforts, those projects slide a little bit one way or the other. It makes a huge difference in terms of the budget dollars in which year. So I just wanted to mention that as something we're trying to keep close tabs on and keep in front of us. That's all I had. Any questions?
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm next. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. As you know, my business unit has responsibility for distribution, water, wastewater, and generally overall customer service. So, you know, our tagline or our focus on our business plan is we provide safe, economical, and reliable utility services. And 2018 really marks an interesting phase or a shift in both our business planning and budget, is that we're moving away from a lot of planning efforts that we put in place to moving into executing and moving forward and delivering on a few things. And that's will be the focus of what I wanted to touch on this morning. Steve had mentioned the customer information system is a key project for us. I think the district recognizes the importance of doing this and doing it right. 2016, we started the effort. And right now, we are currently in the final stages of selecting an implementation partner. And we anticipate getting going on this project the first quarter of 2018. While the schedule is yet to be determined, we anticipate the implementation to go at a pace that reflects the quality and level of resources we're putting into it. You recently have seen that Mark O'Brien has moved over from his strategic financial planning role to being a project manager for the customer information system, and as we look into advanced metering as well. We have chosen to move forward with the logical upgrade from our current PeopleSoft customer information system. It has the benefit of a similar data structure, terminology, and IT infrastructure behind it. We are also looking to implement a complementary technology that will position us for future offerings to handle more data and provide future customer service offerings. This is important as we aspire to move to advanced metering. Installing this functionality will set the table for that project and reduce the need to add other technologies at a later date, as well as to provide a pathway to begin using this meter data to, again, help manage our system. When we're shifting gears and looking at our distribution assets, which Steve has mentioned in the setup, that has been a pretty strong focus in our planning phases. We are preparing today for tomorrow. It's pretty clear we've got some work to do. We've gained a lot of information through the asset management information that was put in place several years ago. Our focus has been on our substations, given the critical role that they play in serving our customers. While we are making strides, we are also completing our understanding of what I would call our wires class of assets, both overhead and underground. As you heard during the last board update, we are anticipating putting in place 7 new substations over the next 5 years to serve what our growth expectations are. And then looking forward, we anticipate maybe 1 every 2 years to keep up with that growth. In addition, we are planning to refurbish one existing substation annually. More immediate, in 2018, we will begin the design and ordering of equipment for the three substations that you've heard over this past year, the OMI, North Shore, Chelan, and Leavenworth. During this year, we also put in place a strategy to begin addressing National Electric Safety Code improvements, or what we call NESC. Given the magnitude of this work that we've discovered over this year, we have seen a shift of traditional engineering and craft resources away from traditional underground cable replacement programs and traditional programs that we've had in place. So in our 2018 plan, we are developing the capability to get back to that, and we see the need to replace 3 to 6 miles of end-of-life underground cable, as well as programmatically put in a place a way to look at our overhead feeders, our overhead lines, and begin an annual strengthening of one circuit a year. We do that with the goal of maintaining our high reliability standards. As you heard before, we target a 99.98% uptime, you know, lights on availability, and we plan on maintaining that through these programs. Steve had touched on load growth as well. We also recognize and reflect that we're in a period of higher than normal load growth, both at the residential level with new developments and line extensions being applied for, as well as the commercial and industrial sector. You've heard about the recent diamond foundry. The port has expansion plans. We're seeing development in hotels around the community, as well as a continued interest in the high-density load and cryptocurrency. While a bit anecdotal, some of a recent review of applications that we have and what I would call serious conversations with the development community, over the next several years we see up to potentially 40 megawatts of capacity being needed just for significant larger loads. Again, it speaks to that we're in a really dynamic time. And then again, our goal is to have that capacity ready so we can connect up customers and meet our obligation to serve. In general, our load forecast has shifted. Historically or recent history, it's been about a 1.3%, and that shifted to 2.3% when looking out longer term. Understanding that this growth creates costs, such as adding new substations, lines, and wires, we want to begin a conversation about how to help pay for that. You know, currently, we operate under somewhat of a growth pays for growth. So again, we anticipate bringing a conversation forward about potential policies. I know one was mentioned earlier, even a system development charge, similar to what we have in the water system to help offset those costs. But that's a conversation we will bring forward.
John, that 2.3% growth, and we historically had 1.3, are we seeing a divergence from our utility and other utilities?
You know, again, anecdotally, from what I heard, I think a lot of utilities are struggling with load. It tends to be reducing for a number of factors. You know, I just look at our county and just I feel we're in a bit of a dynamic period. We've had these periods before where, you know, we have hundreds of new line extensions and new applications just in the residential sector. But we're also seeing, again, from business expansion, other businesses wanting to move in here. And again, our rates are pretty attractive, and I can't help but think that's a pretty good incentive. Shifting over to our water and wastewater efforts, earlier this year, the board approved what we call our 6-year comprehensive water plan. A couple of key drivers in that are projects. We're looking at to refurbish or relocate the upper Skyline Reservoir. It's at its end of life. That's generally around the number 2 Canyon area in Wenatchee, as well as keep up with our main replacements of our aging water lines. On the wastewater side, a key driver will be the compliance of meeting the mandate to meet the total maximum daily load of reducing phosphorus on the Peshaston treatment plant. It's been in design stage. Given that we anticipate the capital budget to pass at the state level and receive the funding to begin construction in 2018 as well. I forgot to mention, although Steve did already, the second regional water source. There's been quite a bit of activity looking for a second source. I anticipate Ron Slabaugh coming forward shortly to provide a board update of where that stands. And again, how do we move forward strategically siting that critical resource to meet the needs into the future? So in conclusion, 2018 really, in the following years, really mark a change and a shift in executing on a lot of planning efforts around those projects that I mentioned, and I feel that our business plan represents that and aligns well. And with that, if there are any further questions.
Yeah.
So talking about the upgrade of the Peshaston sewage treatment plant to meet the standards. You talked about ecology and of course what we're looking at is the issue of the budget, the state budget. So is ecology giving us any leeway in terms of time frame on achieving the goals of removing all the phosphorus from the river?
I think right now with the Peshaston plant, we still anticipate by the end of Q1, knowing that understanding that we anticipate the capital budget being passed and that those grant funds being available to support that project. So it really hasn't been an ecology discussion at this point. Now, we have had discussions with ecology when it concerns the Dryden aspect of this, because that's a bit unique. We have a plant that's further located away. It's not a single source wastewater plant like the Peshaston is. So I know Ron's working hard with others here like Marcy to work with ecology and find cost-effective ways to meet that compliance aspect. And part of that is timing.
So you're seeing some flexibility there?
So far, yes.
But then on the Peshaston one, if the budget doesn't get passed and we don't get the grant money, I guess then, I mean, there's been, I'm sure Ron has anticipated that could happen, is looking at other options.
I would anticipate we would begin a conversation with them.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Thanks a lot. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Mike Coleman, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecommunications. I'm going to summarize the business plans for both fiber and telecommunications at one time and save us a little bit of time this morning. I've been here 5 years as of August. One of the things that I knew when I came here was that the Chelan broadband network was truly a benefit of public power for the communities, for the county. And it continues to bring value to our customer owners. I think that's been driven home a lot during the last couple of years. But since we don't have economic development in our statutory scope, what we do know is that our network provides the vehicle for economic development through enabling the availability of high-speed broadband services. And to that end, we're continuing to expand our network under the Public Power Benefit Program while remaining focused on improving service levels, capacity, and reliability of the network. This is what enables businesses to be open to the world. It allows individuals to participate in the digital economy and distance learning and improves the overall quality of life in Chelan County. That's an awful lot for one little broadband network, but it does it well. So our business plans for 2018 and beyond are focused on key outcomes that allow us to make a difference. We're going to continue expansion of the network under the PPB while preparing construction plans for the following years. We're continuing to develop and implement asset management programs in both fiber and telecom to guide the network system's improvements in security, performance, and reliability. We're doing joint planning with customer utilities to improve the efficiency of our expansion while improving compliance. And we're continuing our projects to replace the microwave and land mobile radio system that carry the critical traffic necessary for safe and efficient work operations. Steve mentioned you're going to get an updated presentation that kind of continues on from the February presentation, and also a resolution allowing us to move forward with the next phase of that project, which will come this afternoon. One of the other things we're doing is continuing to implement the advanced services on the Unified Communication System, which we implemented this year. There's a lot of efficiency and customer-facing improvements that we can add on top of that system. The key unknowns for us haven't changed very much, but we continue to seek ways to mitigate the impacts from those variables. The dominant service provider continues to be our highest risk to the program. We still have a lack of redundancy in portions of the network, and potential catastrophic failures continue to require ongoing planning and analysis using risk-based and cost-benefit analysis to guide our decision-making. We also see emerging technologies resulting in the need to stay ahead of the competition. We absolutely have to keep our network viable and up-to-date compared to competitors' offerings. As a small and specialized organization, the impact of losing critical employee skills is magnified. We did suffer from that a little bit when we lost a key, very, very talented telecom engineer in 16, and it did impact some projects. The good news on that, though, is we found another telecom engineer that was equally talented and also brings another fresh perspective into the organization. So we feel good about our plans, and we're looking forward to another productive and successful year in 2018. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're good.
Thanks, Mike.
Commissioners, Greg Carrington, Managing Director of Energy Resources, and I'm here to talk to you about our energy resources plans for the next 5 years, how we will make a difference. We plan on optimizing the wholesale position and customer energy solution programs to enhance our revenues and customer experiences in support of our strategic objectives. We will continually improve our performance and anticipate, monitor, and respond to new opportunities and risks. In other words, continuous improvement on the things we do. As Steve alluded to earlier, the energy market changing on a daily basis, and keeping up with it sometimes is a full-time job, or it is a full-time job. We plan on diversifying our wholesale portfolio. And when I talk about wholesale portfolio, I'm referring to energy, environmental attributes like renewable energy and carbon, and also ancillary services, and that would be like capacity, flexibility, our real-time agreement, reserves, frequency response, and things of that nature. And we plan on diversifying our wholesale portfolio by enhancing and increasing our predictability of the revenues by using analytics. We have people that are looking at the dynamics of the market on a daily basis and paying attention to that. I consider that to be the intersection point with the Western power market as a whole. And so as I go through this, I'll say where we're intersecting with the various things at the district. We're going to anticipate, monitor, and influence the evolving power markets in the West and put the district in the best position to maintain value to our customer owners. An example of that was the SB 100 bill in California and the fact that they targeted Northwest Hydro and seemed to be restrictive on that, and we took a hard look at that and tried to stay on top of that. We're going to provide products and services that are responsive to the changing market and regulatory conditions that meet the needs of our wholesale purchasers. You know, in the old days, the only thing that mattered was energy. Now capacity and flexibility, integrating wind, the energy imbalance market are now taking front and center, so we have to be dynamic and change the products and services that we offer. We'll continue to pursue and enhance our longer-term marketing plan. Steve talked about that a little bit earlier. You know, we had the Avista 10-year deal. We will continually seek ways of expanding the long-term market and come back to you throughout the year with ideas as to things that we could do in those areas. And then finally, we're going to diversify the portfolio by evaluating and promoting new large loads that enhance the value of our customers and to our local community. This is the intersection point between our wholesale revenues and our retail revenues. Things like the Alcoa load are considered to be a wholesale revenue source. What is the proper mix in the future regarding the mix between retail and wholesale? Right. In the past, our wholesale revenues, we've been trying to address the three key risks that we always talk about, you know, the price risks, stream flow risk, operational risks. And how do we do that if we have additional retail loads that are coming in, and what's the best way and what's the best mix? We're going to be implementing a restructured hourly coordination plan in the future. Steve alluded to the fact that both Douglas and Grant have given us notice that they're withdrawing from hourly coordination. We're coming up with our best plans for moving forward with that. We're going to enhance our energy efficiency acquisitions and do more than what our compliance obligations require us to do. And then finally, we're going to provide energy solutions that anticipate and respond to customers' changing energy needs that lead to outstanding customer experience. An example of that is electric vehicles. We're getting requests within the energy efficiency group to help customers hook up electric vehicles. We want to be responsive to our electric customers' needs in that area. So that's the intersection point with our customers is in that area as well. Our known unknowns, obviously energy prices are front and center as far as we're concerned. Curtailment of large baseload resources and natural gas prices in the West. When we say curtailment of large baseload resources, we're talking about coal and natural gas. There's a push to, you all know about, to eliminate coal, and that is a major part of the Western power grid. And what does that do to the grid as a whole? There's also some legislation that people have been talking about, no new gas or eliminating the need for gas as well. We have to figure out how that's going to influence prices as well. California energy market regulatory regime is very important to us. California is a huge economic driver in the West Coast. What they do impacts all of us. Hourly coordination and independent operations, I already talked about. Distributed energy resources are becoming more viable. So this is, you know, when you live in a place like California where the price of power at the peak load is 42 cents a kilowatt hour, you are going to go out and you're going to search for other ways of getting energy sources that are lower than 42 cents. And we're going to be seeing more distributed engineering energy throughout the West, and we'll be seeing other things of that nature be developed as well. We are going to be struggling with energy efficiency programs. We've already plucked the low-hanging fruit, and as we move into our next five-year planning period, it's going to be harder to get lower-cost energy efficiency programs. Regulatory uncertainties. Everybody, I think every single person that's been here so far has talked about regulatory uncertainty. So, and then finally, the last thing we have known unknowns is the energy imbalance market. We have a few of our purchasers that have already entered into the energy imbalance market. Puget has joined. PowerX has announced that they will be joining by, I think, April of next year. We have to pay attention to that, and we have to think about what that does to the real-time market in the future. So there's a lot there to think about. It's changing every day, and just wanted to see if you had any questions.
Just a comment, 42 cents at peak load makes solar a whole lot more competitive.
It makes it a lot, especially if you have incentives with that as well, right? Right. But now you're seeing negative pricing, and you're seeing power prices that are below, you know, the actual avoided cost of some of the companies, and you have to figure out where is that balance going to be in the future. People can't afford to operate below their costs for very long. You would expect the market is going to make some sort of correction in the future. It's just a matter of when and how and whether there will be subsidies to help offset that.
We'd think that power price was high even if they moved to decimal point.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
So, Greg, in your analysis with distributed energy changing the balance, have we talked about who our customer of the future might be?
That is a subject matter that is taking hold very clearly in California. You're getting customers that are getting together, and the strength of the customers are they're then going out and saying, what type of energy do we want? How much are we willing to pay? And they're negotiating contracts on behalf of their customers as a consolidated group. Here, because of our energy prices, we are fortunate because there's not a lot of incentives for our customers to go out and search for lower cost energy anywhere in the Western grid. But that doesn't mean that we don't need to pay attention to it and we don't need to anticipate it. And that's the reasons why we're always trying to do things for our customers. We want them to see us as being a partner with them and, you know, offering energy efficiency, helping them with electric vehicles. If we stay in touch with our customers and we're responsive to the customer's needs, then hopefully that's not something that the district is going to have to worry about in the near future.
Does it create a selling opportunity?
I think it always does. You know, we have to think about that, and that's why we're taking a look at the retail rates and taking a look at the large lows that John was alluding to as well.
Great. Thanks. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Felicity Saberhagen, business advisor, and I'm in for Jeff Smith today, who is not able to be here. District Services Business Unit is dedicated to enhancing the life in Chelan County. We're a diverse group, and we include 14 unique functional areas ranging from providing fleet vehicles and services for our operational units all the way to maintaining and managing our district parks, which span from Rock Island to Manson. Our key areas of focus for the next five-year planning cycle will help us meet our overall objective to enhance the life in Chelan County PUD, or Chelan County, excuse me. What I'm going to share today are the things that are top priorities, but we're not limited to that, of course. Leveraging the value of our district-owned assets and properties, which for us includes hatcheries, parks, support facilities, and support services for assets managed by other operational units. Protecting the natural resources that have been entrusted to us. Providing high-quality recreational locations and facilities for use by our customer owners as well as visitors to Chelan County. And promoting federal, state, and local policies that benefit our customer owners, especially those that protect our revenues, resources, and assets for the long run. With such a diverse group, we do lots of detailed planning, and I'm going to share all of that with you today. I'm just kidding, since we'd like to go to lunch, I'm sure. given that, I'll just share a few of our key initiatives and actions that we believe will help meet our objectives over this planning cycle. First, we will utilize and refine standardized processes for project management and engineering support. As you all have heard, we have lots of large projects associated with our generating units over the next 5 years and beyond that planning cycle as well. We will be implementing a strategic facilities plan that allows us to get the best for the most for the longest out of our facilities. As you've also heard about that, it's still underway, and we haven't decided exactly what that's going to look like or the timing of it, but we will be managing that aspect of it through district services. We're currently managing our public power benefits program, and we'll be implementing lessons learned as it evolves. In addition to the overall process, district services is managing the Parks Day Use Pass and camping pilot programs. We will incorporate asset management standards to systematically maintain district-owned lands, facilities, hatcheries, and our parks. Like the rest of the district, we do have high expectations for delivering results. Some of our key outcomes we expect from our efforts include the ability to create long-term value of our assets. As I mentioned earlier, we'll do that through standardized project management processes, especially for those major projects, such as our hydro projects and our facilities work that we'll be doing. Expanding partnerships with our low-income and Hispanic customer owners. We know we can do better to serve these segments with our population, and we will be doing that with intention. We've specifically added a resource over the last year to address that. Increase our knowledge about potential climate change impacts. You've heard a little bit about that today. This impacts how we would manage our resources now and into the future. And lastly, our efforts to gear us to meet our obligations associated with our hydro licenses and habitat conservation plans. These obligations are important cornerstones for maintaining relationships with each of our stakeholders on the projects. With that, I'm concluding it. If you have any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Good morning. I'm Lorna Klimansky, Managing Director of Human Resources and Safety. In HR and safety, we are thinking a lot about the nature of work and workers in the future. Because we don't know everything the future will bring, we are focusing our efforts on preparing the district by supporting continuous learning and adaptability, by investing in developing effective leaders, and by supporting business units in their pursuit of safety and operational excellence. The timing and rate of retirements and other turnover, along with the loss of technical and institutional knowledge, as well as changes in market trends in technology for wages and regarding demographics, including the availability of and competition for workers with needed skills and other characteristics of the workforce of the future, are all some of the known unknowns driving us in this direction. We're also examining how we can improve and streamline HR functions to work in synergy so we can acquire, develop, and motivate top talent with the skills and abilities needed for the district's future success. And while our heads are in the future, we are keeping our feet planted on the ground to protect the district's customer owners by keeping current with constantly changing employment regulations and by providing support to managers and supervisors so they can safely navigate the complexities of the regulatory environment while achieving their business goals. Changes in the political environment and changing employment regulations are among the known unknowns. We have begun partnering with WAPUTA and are also working independently to inform legislators and favorably influence legislative outcomes, and we will continue that in the current business planning cycle. So now I'd like to share with you a few of the key outcomes we will be working toward in 2018 and beyond to accomplish all of that. At the last board meeting, you heard a brief presentation about the culture change initiative coming out of safety. That's a really exciting and transformational initiative. Operating units are already applying the guiding principles of human performance improvement beyond just safety. They are using HPI principles and tools to drive toward operational excellence in other ways as well. So HR and safety will continue to develop the initiative and expand training and support to all levels and in additional areas of the district. Another initiative we are passionate about is talent management. We will identify and adopt a comprehensive talent management philosophy along with internally consistent strategies to guide the district's recruitment, total rewards, performance management, and employee development efforts so the functions support and reinforce each other. This will be critical to our success in competing for top talent and that has the continuous learning, adaptability, and critical thinking skills needed to ensure the district's future operating capability. As part of our talent management initiative, we will also continue to develop the district's workforce to maintain and or enhance overall performance as institutional knowledge is lost through retirements and as technological advances change the nature of work. We'll develop leaders through training and provide other support to inspire high performance and positive morale. We'll support individual development by facilitating training and development opportunities linked to current and future district needs. We will design total reward strategies to attract and retain future talent through competitive compensation and flexible benefits packages. We'll design jobs to attract and retain future talent by providing for growth with defined career paths, job enrichment, rotation, and balance. We will also design leadership profiles and roles that will meet the district's needs for leading the workforce of the future. And we'll explore strategies to meet the district's needs for talent attraction and knowledge retention. And then there are employment costs, which are a big part of the budget for most employers, and we're no different. And we take seriously our responsibility to ensure financial and administrative sustainability. In this business planning cycle, we'll negotiate a collective bargaining agreement that meets the district's needs for financial sustainability and ease of administration while maintaining or enhancing levels of mutual trust and respect between labor and management. We'll also continue to work on developing innovative health benefit solutions that meet the district's interests in financial sustainability and that maintain a high standard of health care for our employees and their families. Additionally, we will evaluate our administrative systems and processes for more efficient and effective ways to serve the district's HR and safety needs. Another of our significant initiatives is continuing our utility-focused job and work readiness efforts. In August, we talked with you about the many efforts made by individuals throughout the district to ready the local workforce for jobs with our utility and for work in general. As I committed then, we will continue or expand most of those efforts. For example, Human Resources will continue community partnerships to provide job shadows and student internships. We will continue to outreach to groups that are underrepresented in our workforce, and we will continue to develop programs to encourage people of all ages to think of the PUD as an employer of choice and to educate them on what it takes to be successful as a job applicant as well as an employee. So I thank you very much for your support of these and our other HR and safety priorities for this five-year business planning cycle. And I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions? Thank you.
We have about less than 10 minutes of material left.
Just keep going. Keep going. I want Eric standing between us and lunch.
I want Eric to be that one standing in between you two, so I'm going to go really quickly. This is Kelly Boyd again, and for finance, risk, and IT, I'm going to start with finance and risk, and we'll make a difference by promoting prudent financial and risk disciplines to keep the district financially strong and rates stable and affordable for our customer owners, just like you've kind of heard woven through this entire presentation. Our key way that we provide that value to customers is through keeping our bond ratings high and amongst the highest of utilities in the country, maintaining customer owner confidence through our clean audit opinions, and evolving business intelligence capabilities to continue as an organization to become a data-driven organization for our decision-making. IT. We'll make a difference by helping all staff members achieve more through the use of information and technology. We'll add value for our customers by being relentless in protecting against cybersecurity risks and providing a highly available, secure, and resilient computing environment. We'll partner with other business units to provide technical tools to help them achieve their goals. And just a few examples of those include upgrading our customer information system and advancing our two-way metering capabilities, implementing a governance risk and compliance system, and evolving our enterprise mobility program over time, but we'll be starting with the feasibility of a paperless boardroom. Eric, I think it's to you.
Wow.
Any questions for Kelly?
Please.
Good morning, commissioners. Or almost, well, I guess now afternoon. So Eric Walquist, general counsel. I manage the district's legal compliance and audit group. So we have two primary functions in our group, the first of which is to effectively support the district's operating units and all of that stuff you've heard about this morning. And we do that daily by providing legal, contracting, and other compliance-related advice. We'll continue to do that in an effective manner this upcoming year in 2018. Our other primary responsibility, though, is to manage and improve the district's legal and compliance risks. And we do that in a number of ways. We do support the district's Board of Commissioners and provide advice on Open Public Meetings Act and other issues that come before the board, including related to the public meetings. We do provide audit and compliance reviews internally to improve the district's internal controls and mitigate compliance and process risk. We will continue to do that. One of our efforts this year will be to secure an industry standard best practice peer review of our own audit program. You'll hear more about that through the audit committee as those plans continue to evolve for execution in 2018. We do have joint responsibility with Kelly and IT for managing and implementing the district's governance, risk, and compliance effort, and that will continue into 2017, as will our own internal initiative related to improvement of the district's records responsibilities, both related to the retention obligations for public records and the disclosure of public records when they're requested. And then we will continue to operate to the greatest extent within our budget all of the many external legal and compliance resources the district utilizes year over year, really on a day-to-day basis. Questions?
Thank you. Actually, it's not Eric standing between us and lunch. It's you, isn't it? Well, there's a general manager operating unit plan.
Oh, and we didn't have to cover that one here.
Part as a way to try to empower the organization to think more about the use of innovative technologies. So we have, as part of our values, to be valued as an innovative, trusted, and highly respected public utility. So there's a big innovation component there. Have not felt like we can fully act about it. So it's something for you to consider and be thinking about is figure out how to pull that innovation out to the organization.
So then Kirk could buy his first transmission monitoring drone with that budget?
Actually, I think we are pretty close to purchasing our first drone already.
Is that right? Cool.
Very cool. Not necessarily just for transmission monitoring. We've done a business case that looks at all of the potential uses for drone technology.
We won't.
Would those requests come to you, or? So I think we can talk about more of anything if you want to hear about it. The point that I really wanted to close with is to say that so we have a lot of conversation about that.
Yeah.
What we really tried to do is reflect what we think are the values of the board in this budget. And I think the question now is how well did we do? So that's the conversation we have over the course of the next month.
This is incredibly helpful, well-organized, well-presented, terrific. We've not had it quite like this before, have we?
We tried to do it last year, and hopefully we're going to keep getting better.
This is great. Thank you.
Good. All right. That all
and Eric, that was the record.
Thank you. And we will
good job, Eric.
Recess and reconvene.
Abbreviating and speaking quickly.
Really?
I'm going to stay the whole time.
Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everybody to the afternoon session of the October 2, 2017 meeting of Chelan Public Utility District. This morning we met in our study session and had a great tutorial in the business plans for the upcoming year. It was very intense and very in-depth, and I want to thank all of the staff members that participated in that, and most especially Kelly Boyd for all of her hard work in putting all of this together. We do appreciate it, Kelly. Want you to know that. And everybody else.
And Kelly, did you notice you got a pass on the length?
Well, and I was going to say great brevity, because that's not easy.
Yeah, that
appreciate it.
For what they covered, that was, yes. You know, 2 hours was a brief update.
Yep.
So.
I actually do think you said that to me on the record.
So anyway, seeing that there are no, does not appear that there's any visitors other than the North Central Washington Life Media here. Happy to see you there, and understand that you're trying to build your repertoire for us, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Commissioners, the first item on our agenda this afternoon is the consent agenda. What is the wish of the board?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of the consent agenda.
And I would second that.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. And we have one agenda item, one resolution today that I will turn it over to Steve Wright to introduce.
A resolution approving a request for proposals for digital mobile radio system and authorizing the general manager of the district to publish notice inviting sealed proposals for said project. As I mentioned earlier this morning, I think this one is important because it's reflective of some of the concerns we have about underinvestment in our system. So, mass blockchain, they paid a lot.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Thank you for this opportunity to provide you with this brief update of the district's two-way radio system replacement project, which is underway. I'm Bob Shane, the Director of Fiber and Telecom, and with me I have David Lodge, who is the engineering with Engineering and Project Management. David will be presenting. He's also the project manager on this replacement, as well as the microwave system, which is tied to this particular project. During the presentation, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to ask or make comments, and we'll do our best to answer that. David?
So as Steve and Bob both mentioned, we're here today to request a resolution authorizing an RFP, but we wanted to give you some information about the system that we're replacing, and also talk about the steps so far in the project and the steps to come in replacement. So the first thing is, when we talk about the mobile radio system, we're talking about two separate but related systems. We can't talk about one without talking about the other, which is the microwave network. So there's a little graphic up on the screen that I think helps to explain the difference. So on the left-hand side, you see the vehicles with mobile radios. That represents our district field crews that have portables and mobile radios out in the field. Those radios communicate with mountaintop sites, Birch Mountain, Chelan Butte, Natapoc, those sites. And then from there, the signal is transmitted over the microwave network. That's what you see on the right, through backhaul back to the system operations or dispatch center. So today we're talking about the mobile radio system, specifically the radio system, but it is transported over the microwave network, which is related. So I wanted to kind of lay the groundwork there. Two separate systems, but related. So why does this need to be replaced? It's a critical component for effective and safe operations. This is a tool that's needed by our field crews and our hydro crews for reliable communications during normal operations and emergency operations. So it's got to work when they need it to work. The system was installed in 1996, so it's over 20 years old. I don't know if anybody here is still using their cell phone from 20 years ago, but with telecommunications technology, we've got to keep up with current technology. So this system is no longer supported. And as time goes on, it's increasing the risk of failure. So Kirk wanted to mention something else on that subject.
Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. I just wanted to emphasize the importance of this to our field personnel. Just in the hydros alone, and not to mention the line crews, water crews, fiber crews that are out there in the field, getting direction from headquarters is really important. It's also really important they use it as their lifeline. If in the hydros, if there is a need for a plant evacuation, that's how we get the message to our crews. For whatever reason, let them know what's going on, where they need to go, and where they need to report. We just had an instance just with a repeater a couple weeks ago that went out at Rock Island. The crews did exactly what they were supposed to do once they lost radio communication. They stopped the work. They gathered all their stuff. They moved out from the lower levels of the dam up into the upper levels, make sure everybody knew what was going on. But you can imagine just that in itself, a little piece of equipment that failed, taking that crew off the work that they were doing, move them up till we figured out what the problem was. It took us, we lost a chunk of time until the next day when we could get back at the work. So just some examples of how important these pieces of equipment are. These guys have done a great job working with the tech shop, recognizing that there is increased risk of failure, and we have a contingency plan in place with spare batteries, spare equipment, to try and get us along for the next couple of years. But that's really as far as the contingency plan goes out. It's only a couple of years that we feel like we can get this system, keep it operational.
Thanks, Kirk. So the project team has been at this for a bit of time now. We started with the feasibility study in 2015, and that feasibility study recommended replacing with digital mobile radio. So that's the technology we plan to use to replace the radio system. And then in 2016, we really wanted to spend some time better understanding the gaps that we have in coverage. So during our feasibility study, the crews mentioned that the coverage isn't complete. As you can imagine, trying to cover all of Chelan County is quite difficult. So we really studied the gaps in coverage that the system currently has and looked at how we could potentially infill those. And the recommendation from that study was to first replace the existing system and then use the new technology to look at infill sites that are much smaller than the macro sites we have now. It could be as simple as just a pole with a repeater on it. But we'll look at those on a case-by-case basis after the replacement. So it's just important to mention that it doesn't expand our existing coverage, just replaces what we currently have. So that recommendation from the feasibility study and that coverage study was taken to the senior management team in the form of a business case to replace both the microwave and radio systems. So the senior management team challenged that recommendation and really wanted to make sure that this is the right approach for the project. So the project team went back and revisited with stakeholders to validate core requirements, and in doing so, eliminated any alternative to this. So if you're thinking, couldn't we use cell phones or some other technology that's out there? Really, to meet the purpose of this system, we landed back on the same recommendation, which was digital mobile radio. So it confirmed the, in that doing so, we confirmed these systems are critical to district operations and also reinforced the original recommendation from the feasibility study. So that was summarized in a business case and presented to senior management team for approval. And then you may recall we actually came to the board in February 6th, and presented on the approach to the project to get the engineering underway. So we broke up the project into distinct pieces of work. The first was site and power improvements to get the sites ready for replacement. And that's currently under construction and should be wrapped up this week. Next is the microwave replacement. And that we are finalizing the scope of work with Nokia to utilize the state contract for that procurement. And we anticipate replacing in 2018. And finally, we're talking about the land mobile radio replacement, the last piece. And we selected digital mobile radio, the DMR standard, and we're ready to publish the request for proposals after your authorization today. So we anticipate replacement starting in 2018, first starting with the mountaintop infrastructure and then followed by replacing the mobile and portable radios, which include all of the radios in district vehicles. And we'll be using tech shop technicians to do that replacement. So what is digital mobile radio and why did we select it? Well, it has a lot of benefits. First, it's essentially the industry standard today, but it's also an open standard, which means there's interoperability between manufacturers and a standard that we expect to have around for quite a while. It offers digital audio quality, which is enhanced audio quality over the current analog system. There are some differences, and we'll work closely with our stakeholders to help educate them on what those differences are and what they can expect as we roll this out. But it is, in general, a higher quality. Also, I will not attempt to get into the physics of it, but it doubles the channel bandwidth, and so we double the amount of channels with the same number of frequencies. And in doing so, creates a longer battery life. It's beyond me how this works, but there's just a lot of benefits to using digital mobile radio. It's also advanced features. There's data applications, caller ID, all kinds of features that we can put to use. So where do we go from here? Today we're asking for approval of resolution to authorize the request for proposals. The reason we chose this mechanism is it allows us to not only evaluate on price, but also on qualifications and performance data. And then if approved today, then we'll continue our outreach to employees. And we've got a series of meetings set up this week. Of course, you're welcome to attend if you're interested, to talk about the benefits of digital mobile radio and also our project plan, just to try to communicate with our stakeholders what to expect. Any questions?
Is this system dependent or independent of our fiber system?
Independent.
primarily independent.
Okay, yeah, that. So it's actually redundant, in some ways a redundant process, which I think is a great enhancement.
Yeah, our current fiber right now is not used on our existing land mobile radio system.
Right.
So nothing is changing that.
Okay, perfect.
As we enhance this and we get some smaller areas, we may want to fill coverage areas. Mm-hmm. We may take a look at fiber and bring in the backhaul.
Okay.
Areas
okay.
So we would leverage fiber in those areas.
And just one last comment. I know that the people in the tech shop have been looking forward to this. So thank you.
One of the questions I have, when you install a system, this system, how much percentage of the system do we actually use? Is there, we use one half of the system and there's growth potential there? Or, and the reason why I'm asking that is, do we ever get questions on collaborations with other entities to use, to buy space or service from us, or is there a benefit to that, or do you avoid that at all costs?
It's a great question. The radio system will be a very reliable system, so it would be something that others could potentially use in that type of environment where they need a critical communication system. In terms of the capacity, the system has limitations in capacity. It's well beyond what we'd expect to use in our particular environment. Some of the capacity issues are limited to the technology. Some are through our license agreement with FCC. Overall, we have a lot of capacity in the system. In terms of a third party wanting to use it, such as maybe first responders, they actually have their own dedicated systems that they're using now, and they've just recently had replaced their system. So the opportunity to integrate is probably not there. However, being the newer technology, when we want to tie the two systems together through a third-party system or device, it makes it much easier to do. But the old-fashioned way is basically give the other dispatch one of the radios that we use, and they grab and give us one of their radios to use to give that interoperability. And that's pretty much the practice in the industry, unless you build from the ground up and you collaboratively get with everybody at the same time and you replace systems, and that just didn't happen here.
I was just curious, thinking if you had the bandwidth or whatever you call it, and you could benefit another agency and then make some money to help continue to support it in the future.
I have not thought of that as from a revenue perspective, but we have thought about it in terms of interagency cooperative use. We have thought that out.
Why don't we take that as an assignment just to give some thought to and get back to you?
Yeah. Yeah. So doubling the number of channels, does that allow us in an emergency situation to connect more readily with other agencies matching channels?
That when we talk about double the channel efficiency, we're talking about our system alone.
Alone.
It doesn't provide us any interoperability outside of
what okay.
We can run. All right. More efficiently and effectively within our platform. So we can have a lot more radios out there
yeah.
in use. So in an emergency, we could dispatch many more radios than we typically have if we choose to buy them and have them.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I just have a question about the coverage area. Taking a look at the map, just rather small, but it looks as though there's a lot of the county that we are not reaching at this point. What's the standard protocol if you have a crew out in that part of the county that's not covered by this? How do they communicate back with headquarters?
Typically what they'll do, they know their fringe areas that they can cover on or cover at, so they'll go back to an area if they have to make communications outside of that area. The radios themselves do operate in a point-to-point application, like a walkie-talkie, so they're in a work environment. The line crews, for example, can communicate to each other regardless of visibility to the repeater that gets them back to dispatch. It's if they have to get back to dispatch, they'll have to leave that area and go to an area where there's adequate coverage to make that call. And sometimes they use their cellular phone. Sometimes cellular coverage is adequate in some of those areas.
Thank you.
Okay. Additional questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioners, we have one resolution to consider, Resolution 6. Is there a motion for approval?
I move for approval of Resolution 6 as written.
Second.
been moved and seconded to approve Resolution 6. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Manager items.
A few today. I'd like to start with Public Power Week. Ask him, Craig, to come up.
Good morning, Commissioners. Good afternoon. I'm Kimberly Craig from Communications, and I'm here to say happy Public Power Week. This is the opportunity once a year where we join public power utilities across the country who are customer-owned in celebrating the unique characteristics of public power. Among many are the local control, which is our commission meeting today, is the best examples. If folks have a question about their utility, they can talk with one of you at Safeway or at the coffee shop, which I know they often do.
Or they can Rotary meeting.
That's right. Or they can come, the first and third Mondays of each month and be on the agenda and have the ability to talk with you directly. That is a tremendous benefit of customer-owned utilities. We also here are blessed to be able to offer a true benefit in lower costs, which provide keep money in the pockets of our customers so they can spend it in the community and still provides them highly reliable service. So we celebrate all of those things. And this year, we're really celebrating the benefits that are brought by energy efficiency. You heard in today's program how there's going to be a continuing focus on energy efficiency. And that we have done about all we can on the low-hanging fruit. We've got LEDs in people's hands. We have helped them understand how to use a little bit less or a little bit more, change their filters in their furnaces. And now we're getting to really talking about the devices that can and the technology that can help them. And that means we need to spend more time helping them understand that, which is the theme for this year, which is to get in the game. Because, you know, winter is coming, and we're going to have them learn a lot more about some of those devices, a heat pump water heater, ductless heat pumps. You know, everybody needs to get their ducts in a row, and a ductless heat pump is a good way to do that.
You quacked me up.
And we're also helping them even do things like light up their life with LED fixtures. So that's the premise for this year. We, through the month of September, have had a contest going. We're encouraging folks to go to local vendors who are participating with us to learn more about these devices. They can enter there. They can. So there's four chances to enter. They can come visit us and talk to our energy experts here, including enjoying pumpkin donuts and cider from 11 to 1 o'clock on Friday. In the office lobbies in Chelan and Leavenworth. So that's five. And then they can come to Pybus Market for the finale celebration and the energy fair on Saturday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. We're going to start drawing names in the prize drawing from there. But before that, people can enter as well. So they have six chances to be a winner. So the odds are pretty good. More than a dozen prizes, including smart thermostats with installation, duct cleaning. So there are some good prizes, and we're looking forward to that. We're also blessed to have folks joining us from Fiber, from Customer Relations, and we get to have a line truck this year and two linemen, Andy Rice and Phil Zoller, who were big hits last year, and they had such a good time, they asked to come back this year. So we hope that you will join us in this celebration. I've left some information on your desk so you can share with customers or those folks that you're talking to at Safeway, and I'm here to answer any questions that you might have.
Sounds like you've got a good plan.
Thank you. We'll look forward to seeing you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Also, would like to give you an update on some work that's going to be going on at Walla Walla Park here quite soon.
Good morning. Casey Hall, project manager for the Walla Walla Shoreline Stabilization Project that Steve's mentioned. Let me bring up a map here so I can show you where we're doing this work.
Oh, it was already up. Nice, Casey. Thank you. I appreciate it. Oh, there we go. Okay, as Steve's mentioned, we've got a project that's kicking off, actually started some of the traffic control work today. This is taking place at Walla Walla Point Park. It's an erosion repair project. What we're doing is we've got about 800 feet of shoreline that we're repairing just below Shelter 2, which is, so you see it with my cursor here, right about there. We've got a lot of, over the course of the last few years, we've had a lot of erosion problems in this section with the high water events we've had the last few years. A lot of concrete debris has been exposed. And this is a really heavily used section of the park. I think if you guys have been out there in the summertime, there's folks down there with their boats, you know, kayakers along the section of shoreline. A lot of hazards that have been come up from these high water events, which I've got some photos here. Photo one here is just some material debris that was dumped at some point in the river. Just a lot of big concrete debris, which is exposed during low water events like now. And then in the summertime, you can't see it, or springtime. So pretty bad hazard for swimmers. This is another section just up from this, the area of a lot of people where they access. This would just be right below Shelter 2. They come down to the water here and use this section, and this is just upstream from that location. So a lot of unstable slopes we want to fix for the public for safety reasons. This is again that swim beach section. Let's see here. So this photo four right here, ballooned area down towards the end of the project. We also found a lot of buried garbage, rebar and concrete sticking out. So this will not only remove that, but also stabilize that shoreline to stop it from keep continuing to going into the park and taking the park property away. Go back to the main page here. So we're going to detour the bicycle traffic onto Walla Walla Avenue. They'll go on at 9th Street or 19th and come on Walla Walla, then come back into the park, back onto the trail. The pedestrians, we still are allowing to use this area. They just won't be able to use the trail. We're going to fence off the actual work area, and then they'll have free rein on that lawn to go back and forth and to get through the park. With the contractor, he's a local contractor, Goodfellow Brothers, Inc., my old, old employer at one time is doing the project, so good contractor, had a good price. They're going to have traffic control while they're working to make sure that if there are pedestrians walking back and forth that they're detoured and the heavy equipment stopped. So good project. We've been a long time in the planning. This is an in-water work project, so we had 2 years worth of permitting involved. I'm glad to get this one done. I think it'll be a big improvement and allow people to use this area of the park again and be safe. Any questions?
How many bids were there on that project? Do you remember?
I think we had four.
This was the low bid?
Correct.
Yep. Or the low responsible bidder, however, without material. I forget the language. Yeah, exception. Okay.
That was really good. Exactly right.
You can become a lawyer next? Thank you.
Yeah, so one thing to add, we are contractors. Their baseline schedule, they're planning on being complete with the in-water work and the work that will affect that trail by the end of the month. Again, that hopefully we can, if we have any damage to the trail, the contractor is responsible to repair it. But you never know with the weather. If we have a bad winter and it gets cold, this isn't a big enough that the asphalt plants are going to stay open for us. So we may have to do a little bit of temporary work to get us through the winter and then pave it first thing in the spring.
What kind of material do you use to secure that bank?
So it's a combination. We've been using a base rock, a large boulder, to give it a good foundation. And then the agencies and along with us like to see a shoreline that has a lot of overwater structure for fish habitat. So we'll use that foundation boulder and then use a geofabric sack. And you stack them on top of each other and you fill them with it's a sandy slash topsoily mix so that you can get like plugs, plant plugs and stuff to grow in it to give it that overwater structure. So that's some of the treatment, some of the lower areas. We're not doing that. We're just laying the slope back further to get it to a point of a catch point, I guess you could call it, so it doesn't erode anymore, and then doing plantings and some temporary erosion methods in the front to get, because really that erosion is the materials you put in, it's really there as a temporary measure to get the plants growing. That's what you want, is good plant growth, good structure, that root, those roots are what's going to hold that shoreline in place. So like, is that time to get established and then so that you can use Mother Nature to help try to withstand that water.
Thank you.
Then do you go back after the roots are established and you have some plants, then do you go back and riprap all of it?
No. The intent is to try to get those plants to, you plant it enough that it covers that whole area with roots so you'll have smaller plants, bigger plants, intermixed, but we do use a temporary cover over the top of those planting areas to hold it, like and stabilize it in the short term while that stuff gets established. So we're really worried about those high flow events when we have those spring freshets in May and June. That's when we get the worst damage, just because the water comes up and stays there and just saturates everything, and then it comes down. So, I mean, those are what we're trying to take care of.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to invite Kelly up. I think she's already got an answer to the question that was from earlier today. And so rather than hold it over to the next meeting, I'll have her respond.
Thank you, Steve. Kelly Boyd. Commissioner Bowles, in response to your question from earlier of if our electric rates had advanced at the CPI rate from 2000 to 2016, what would it be today in cents per kilowatt hour? And it's 4.0, so you were right on with your estimate.
All right.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Which is still the lowest in the nation, isn't it? Or second lowest in the nation.
A couple of other things. Just so you know, recall that with public power benefit dollars that we were going to do some work at the Plains substation to try to improve access to the river. That work should be started this month, and so just wanted you to be aware of that. We'll be reporting out. We're going to do a report out on all of our public power benefit projects later this year, so you'll know more about that.
Drove by it yesterday, and there's been a lot of nice work done already.
Good.
It looks good.
Good.
Yeah, there's a little joke going on in the Plain area that where do we get all those boulders, but that's another story. But anyway, it looks good.
Good.
Yeah, and there was conversations I had yesterday, strong appreciation for it. The attention that's being paid, and it just kind of fits in with the recreational mode in the community of Plains, so I think good project.
Another item, so tomorrow, I'll be on the red eye tonight, actually, because there's the hearing that I was originally scheduled to testify at a couple of weeks ago was postponed until tomorrow. Be talking about the value of hydropower in the context of how do we maintain a reliable power grid, testifying on behalf of Chelan, but also the National Hydropower Association. And you all should have a copy of my testimony.
And for the record, this testimony is before a subcommittee of Congress, correct?
Yes. Sorry. For the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on Energy and Power. We have an inquiry that came in from a gentleman at Pacific Northwest National Lab who's done a lot of work on electric vehicles and the future of electric vehicles. He did a presentation in Richland about how the world is changing, the market is changing. He had sent it originally to me and to Rufus Woods at the Wenatchee World. We both thought it looked interesting. There's now a group form that's going to co-sponsor an event to have him come and speak to the community. Originally looking at October 11th, but there is a conflict with that date, so we're trying to figure out if we're going to stick with October 11th or go to another date, but it very well may happen before the next board meeting. So I wanted you to be aware it's coming up, and we'll give you notification when the date gets set. I think you would find it interesting to see the material. Actually, I think that's it. That's what I had.
All right. Thank you. Commission items. Anybody have anything? If you don't, I've got the report that Commissioner Congdon and I both attended the Waputo Water Workshop up in Leavenworth this past week. And while she's been a regular attendee for several years, it's been quite a few years since I've been there. And I was really reminded at how much, not only how much work goes on with water in the PUDs in the state, but how complex the issues can really be at the operational level. I think that was maybe the single biggest takeaway for me was, wow, these guys got to know a lot of stuff to be effective. And it's just one thing after the other on the regulatory side. You know, we want to provide a good, safe, reliable product. And to let you know that Ron Slabaugh did a marvelous job Friday morning, was the moderator for a couple of panels up there. So it was a good session, and I encourage anybody, when, especially when it's here in the Leavenworth area, to take the opportunity to go up. And, it, you know, it's, most of it is not the, at the policy level. There is a commissioner roundtable for water one segment of the day, and that was somewhat of an enlightening moment. There's been quite a discussion about financing water products here in the state and how
projects.
Okay. And how we can't rely on certain resources anymore, like the state for help, and going out to private banks, state chartered banks. And a key bank for financing Waputo water projects in the state of Washington is Cashmere Valley Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many people were aware of that. You probably were, but that's something that we can be proud of here, I think, in North Central Washington. So anyway, that's, yes.
Yeah, and especially with the Public Works Trust Fund being swept by for 2 years now and pulled into the general fund, there's a real need for financing. So I was just going to say, yeah, the water workshop, it's terrific. It's great. It's well done. Lots of good speakers and panels. But it comes to Leavenworth every other year. So it'll go to the west side, and then in 2 years it'll be back in Leavenworth. But I appreciated Randy attending, and I suggested that he do the welcome speech because I couldn't be there Wednesday night. So thanks for doing that, Randy. I heard he did a nice job. Ron Slabaugh always puts in a ton of work, and he's a huge resource, a really important resource for the water workshop. So we appreciate what Ron has done for many years.
All right.
Just one last thing. We had a lot of discussion, lots of information about the Hearst decision and the Foster.
Yes.
The Foster decision, and you know, it's complex, isn't it? I mean, I'm learning more and more all the time about it, but
That truly put into play the law of unintended consequences.
Oh, boy. Didn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else from commissioners?
Just to let you know, I've sat in on my first regional study committee on water up in Cashmere the other day. Ron Slabaugh was there.
Okay.
They've hired a consultant to go in and do a comparison of several of our communities that are interested in at least collaborating and talking about ways that we may or may not benefit through collaboration and working together. It was a fascinating report, and the report is in draft form, and as soon as that is finished, I'll share that.
And this is the group put together with the public benefit monies, if I'm not mistaken, the regionalization
study committee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Any other commissioner items? I think there is Lisa. Commissioner travel?
I'm Lisa Sanders, admin and finance. I'm here to talk about commissioners' travel. Do you want to go trip by trip, or do you want to ask questions?
I asked my questions earlier, so I'm good.
Okay.
So I don't think, Lisa, that I will be doing any individual committees for Wapuda in October.
Okay, thank you.
Are you on the budget committee?
I am on the budget committee.
Which would put you on the individual committees in October, so you're there. Okay,
yep.
Good. Okay.
Yes, Rim. Okay. Same time you do.
Yep, got it.
All set.
I'll learn how to read better next time.
That's okay. I'll help you. Commissioner Congdon, I just wanted to verify on the November Women in Public Power. Do you want to return on the 9th? The 9th ends at 3:30.
Got to look at the bright side. There's not a lot of traffic going to Chelan that time of night. Yeah. Okay. Anything else on Commissioner Travel?
Good to me.
Thank you.
Okay. So let me know if I can help with anything.
Did we look at the dates on the annual? Which was it? Is it the annual conference I was asking about, the check-in dates?
Yes.
Is the 28th Tuesday?
Yes.
Because I believe it starts on the 29th. So that's...
What time does it start on the 29th?
Well, it's usually, I think the attorneys meet and the general managers meet during the day, and I don't think the commissioners meet until the reception around 5 o'clock.
Which would change my check-in day. Probably would change...
I think that's kind of the standard fare, and I haven't heard that anything has changed, but... Randy's significantly in the loop now, and I'm
yeah,
not.
Yeah, I'll find out and get
but
back.
That could save one
okay,
day.
Yeah, let me know.
One day
then.
For all except potentially.
Well, actually, I think it applies to me, too, so it's probably all.
Okay. All right.
Okay. And I may drive. Okay.
I will definitely drive. It'll take a long time to get there.
You got
to
go through Wilbur and get a Billy Burger, so you can't do that in the airplane.
Yeah.
I had one 2 weeks ago.
They're still good.
So can I check that? Because right now all of you are assumed to be flying. So, but I think I just heard many of you may not be.
I'm driving. I know that.
Driving.
I just want to check the flight schedule. So I'm a question mark.
Okay. So two things to get back to you on. Okay. So Anne may be flying. Commissioner Arsenault is driving. Commissioner Bowles driving.
Driving.
Commissioner McKenna. Driving. Mr. Smith?
Yep, right.
Driving. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, for a minute I thought you hadn't included me, then I turned the page over. So.
I know. I
feel better about myself now.
I couldn't really fit it all on there, and then I felt like if I...
I passed up about 5 comments.
I didn't want you to think it ended in November, so...
Yeah, gotcha.
It's very complicated.
It could be worse when, in the alphabetical order, you could be last like I have been for all my life. So.
So I remember as a kid when we used to get our polio vaccinations, it was a bummer having a B for a last
oh, yeah.
name. Like you're in first line, you're first in line. Like,
try an A.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, I got to watch you pass out.
Okay. Thank you very much. You bet. Okay, next on the agenda is the Walkley Scholarship Drawing. You happen to have with you, Teresa, there's a little written piece about the Walkley Scholarship. I can give something close to it, but if you have it with you, I'd read it.
I have the scholarship at the entries, but whether there's anything on there or not, I don't believe so.
Yeah, well, I probably could share enough for the audience that's on this recording. I think most of the staff members here have heard this before. But the Walkley Scholarship is a scholarship that's provided by the PUD Association that was the fund was established many years ago by a former PUD commissioner, I believe from Franklin County, by the name of Walkley. And their desire was to provide a scholarship for the son or daughter of a PUD employee somewhere in the state in the amount of $1,000 a year to be won by a random drawing, or I guess I should say a couple of random drawings or a series of, because every PUD about this time of year enters the name, all the names of the son or daughter of a PUD employee and their utility into a hat like this one. Maybe it's not a hard hat. It might be hard to dig out of that one because there's, but oh, we'll get to that. But every utility has a drawing, and one name is drawn, and all those names are then forwarded to the PUD Association. And in another drawing, separate drawing, the winner is drawn and receives the scholarship, is invited to attend the annual conference along with their family, to be honored at the annual conference. And now I know I've missed some things not having the written documentation, but it's just a sign that we do value education. And if Dennis or Ann have anything to add to that, they've been both been there before. And
you were an educator, weren't you? For a while.
You did a good job.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think it's just interesting the as things go with trying to manage a piece of an estate that's dependent on a lot of times on the investment market, which sometimes has been better or not so much. And so the state association made the decision X number of years ago to, regardless of what the rate of return was on the Walkley Foundation, is that it would always be $1,000.
Right.
So that's going to be in perpetuity by a vote of the association. So, and we've had winners out of here. It's been good.
We have.
We've had our turn.
Yep. I actually
maybe again.
Was it last year that I drew your daughter's name?
Yep.
Yeah. So, so since I drew last year, I'm gonna have Suzanne draw. Okay. Here we go. Yep. Drum roll. Jada Vaughn.
Oh.
Deborah Vaughn.
Yeah.
Oh. Jada is a girl. Okay.
Nice. Very nice.
Right. Hey. Did I pronounce it right? Okay. J-A. All right. Super.
Nice.
Forwarding that on. All right. Follow up on delegation of action items.
We actually have a lot because we had two meetings between the last meeting and then our workshop. So first of all, considering how to evaluate the economic cost to customers of outages.
Yeah.
You should have received a report this morning that we sent, came from John Stoll, that describes that cost.
Yeah.
So hopefully that will.
So yeah, you can kind of take that formula then and then calculate it out by the number of hours and get some kind of an idea. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate the feedback. Thank you.
Good. And then, so we've got a couple things. The there's an interest on the part of the board in considering the right role for the board to play relative to our HBI initiatives. So we've done a little bit of work on that. Of course, we talked about it at our workshop. And one of the issues was that you wanted to get the training that our supervisors are getting. So that Lorna Klemanski has taken the lead, and she's going to bring in the trainer and work with you all to get something set up for that. And then second, the team that's working on this has discussed sort of role of the board relative to employees, and I wasn't there for that conversation, so Kirk is going to describe that for us.
I did fill Steve in on it, though, so he knows what I'm going to say. Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. So we took your comment or question that you didn't want an answer for during the presentation that Jeremy and Brian did, what's the board's role in human performance, operational excellence, and a number of us on our guiding team for that effort tossed that around, and we don't have the final answer, but we have a suggested path forward for the board. We'd like to propose. The first element is the training that Steve talked about, and what we would do is bring our consultant in that's helping us with that, with the supervisor's training. And one of the things he does in that training is he goes over the five principles of operational excellence, human performance, and we thought that'd be a great place to start for the board. The second piece of that would be then have one of the board members here work with the strategy team and actually go through those five principles and identify how do we apply those in the boardroom as board members. So that would be the second piece, which I think would be really useful. The third piece is we're going to do some benchmarking on our end with the utilities we've been working with to find out if there is a governance model. We don't know of one at the board level, but we're going to find out, see if somebody's already paved the way for this. But in the meantime, we'll go touch base with our contacts and then work with, if you do designate a board member, work with that board member and sharing that information to disseminate to the rest of the board. So anyways, that's the suggested path forward that the guiding team would throw out there for your consideration and available to answer any questions you might have.
Great. Thanks for doing
Good feedback.
I appreciate that in that, you know, I asked that general question, and you know, the board wants to be very supportive and take those self-improvement initiatives and make sure that that's a priority and bring it to the level of you know, when you get what you monitor, and when you set those expectations and people understand that the board is interested in that and they're monitoring that and they want to know what they can do to support that for staff. Those are important things. So thank you for doing that.
No, thank you.
Look forward to it.
Thank you. And just to let you know, the two gentlemen that presented that day were ecstatic that the board was really interested in that. And trying to find out where the board fits into that role and the effort was just music to their ears. So thank you for the interest.
So Randy, we probably look to you to help us to identify the board member that will work with us on that, as we have with past practice.
Okay.
Kirk, thank you.
So let's see, other action items from the board workshop. We had a discussion about dropping the quarterly small works report because it's not providing much useful information. But also there was interest, particularly on the part of Commissioner Arsenault, to be able to have some time in advance of the meeting to look at the quarterly report on big capital projects. So Dave Nelson will be working with you to make that happen. We've confirm the cost of the feasibility study for the paperless board meeting is at the $30,000 level. I gave you the wrong number at the board meeting, so it's a $30,000. The customer experience video that Commissioner McKenna asked for, I believe, has been delivered. You should have that in your email or someplace. Have you seen that?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay. Just want to make sure you got it. We talked about the human performance improvement training. Eric had an assignment to work with Commissioner Congdon on the delegation authority. I understand that hopefully happened this morning. Mm-hmm. And the group agreement is one that is actually in your court to follow up on.
I think it's signed now.
It's signed.
It's up for signature.
Yeah. Okay. And I think it's done.
That's what I've got. I did, if I could, I would like to do two other quick things. There was a letter that we received about a week ago relative to a concern in Peshastin about whether the operation of our system might be creating a risk for their system in terms of compliance. Don't know if that crossed your desk, but the good news is it's fixed. So John and Ron Slabaugh took care of that last week, so that potential problem is not a problem. And the other thing I wanted to do is next week we'll have a new employee terms of clerk of the board, and Rebecca Garfine. And we're excited to have her here. Teresa is going to stay while Rebecca gets used to the job, so you're going to see her around for a bit longer. But I wanted to just take a moment to say thank you to Teresa, because I was sitting here looking at this list of follow-up action items and going, well, somebody just did a great job on that. But it's more than that. Teresa has just been marvelous and just fantastic in the way that she has shown personal accountability and stepped up and taken on these duties. And such a good job, in fact, that I think we are going to be finding ways to be able to keep her involved in this as we go forward, because she's a real talent, and we're fortunate to have her. And we want her to be able to provide lots of great value to our customer owners. So, Teresa, I want to say thank you for everything you've done over the last couple of months. And that's it.
Okay. And from today, delegation action
items? Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. We had two. One of them's already taken care of, and that's Kelly reporting on the what the rate would be if we had rate increases at CPI. Second one is asking Bob Shane to look at the potential for if there is revenue potential from the microwave radio system as we look at the others that might be able to use it.
Okay. I see no members of the public here. Any other matters that necessarily need to come before the commission? We will be probably at our next meeting needing to talk about potential for a special meeting up in Chelan. I thought I would, even though I don't have it here, and John Stoll now has the letter that I got this morning and shared with all my fellow commissioners, there was a petition sent to us with 34 signatures on it from Leavenworth regarding the routing of the new transmission line to the new substation. And this petition was in support of the route that the district is proposing to move forward with. So I just wanted to let people know that, one, their voice has been heard, and we do appreciate that, and that we've all looked at that. So thank all of the folks that signed that petition. So, any other matters to come before the commission before we move into executive session? In that case, after a short 5-minute break, I'll move us into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCWs, to consider the selection of a site for the acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause a likelihood of increased price as authorized by the RCWs, and to evaluate the qualifications of an applicant for public employment or to review the performance of a public employee, again, as authorized by the RCWs. So we'll take a short break and come back for approximately 90 minutes?
Yes.
For approximately 90 minutes. We're coming out of executive session. It is approximately 3:35. While in executive session, no votes were taken, no decisions were made. Is there any other business to come before the commission today? Hearing none, we'll stand adjourned.